You've seen those movies where they say, make my day, or I'm your worst nightmare. Well, listen to this one. Rubber baby buggy bumpers. Ha! You didn't know I'm gonna say that, did you?
Your move, creep.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room.
Wait a minute, Doc. Are you telling me that you built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to an episode of the Film Feast podcast. I am your host, Matt Bledsoe, and this week we are starting a brand new monthly series called Master Carpenter. We'll be talking about the films and the career of director John Carpenter. Since we're picking up the series from the Cobwebs podcast, we'll be starting a little later into John Carpenter's career, and we are starting at 1984 with Starman. To help me talk about it, it's the man who started this series on the Cobwebs podcast. He's the host of the terrific Cobwebs channel on YouTube. It's Daniel Epler. Daniel, how you doing?
Hey, man, I'm doing so good. Thank you for having me for this John Carpenter episode.
I feel like I bought your house and I'm living in and bringing you back to like stay at the house where thanking me. It's like you can visit. So, I'm happy to have you here. I hope we have you on all the Master Carpenter episodes if it works out. So I'm very happy to have you talk about Starman. And we're not alone, though, because we're also happy to be joined by the host of the Schooled by Cinema podcast. It's Lexi Van Dyke. Lexi, how are you doing?
I am good. I'm excited to chat more Carpenter. I'm going to be probably like the world's biggest, well-known critic on Madam Web, and then second might be Carpenter. Good all the Carpenter podcasts I've been on.
Madam Web's really, that's where you're really going to get the money, I think, though. People want.
I know. I'm really going to get those DMs and phone calls, but please come on.
Yeah, I was listening to your guys' Hangout episode, and I just could not believe that Matt went to his theater and thought, I'm not going to watch Lisa Frankenstein. I'm going to watch Madam Web. Like, I don't understand the thought process.
Okay, to be fair, I think the theater that I went to, I didn't really look. I think Lisa Frankenstein already left that theater.
They didn't make much money, so that's not a shock.
Yeah. They're the ones that serve food. I feel like they're very, like, we popcorn only play movie, like the biggest stuff or the newest stuff. Like, I'm amazed when smaller stuff even gets in there at all. I'm like, oh my God, they were playing Lisa Frankenstein, but I think by the time it was gone. But I do want to see it.
Everyone jokes on them because Madam Web wasn't even number one its opening weekend. It got beat by Bob Marley.
We did talk about it. Bob Marley kicked their ass really bad. It was not even close, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, well, again, my lunch was great, so it was all
it was all worth it.
We got to discuss Madam Web. That was probably the highlight. I got to talk about Madam Web with Lexi, and that was the most fun part of Madam Web.
And I'm talking about Madam Web again on another podcast.
Like, dedicated to it?
Yes.
Or just, oh.
Is it schlock and awe?
No.
Oh, I was going to say, that felt
that
like...
seemed like something Lindsay would do. She'd pair Madam Web with some, like,
no, it's know, prestigious about movie about a this Madam. Movie. So get ready. I'll let you know when that's dropping.
Okay.
Can't wait. I will listen to people talk about Madam Web all day. I don't want to watch it again, but I will see people talk about it. I was thinking Chalk and All too, because I feel like, God bless Lindsay, she's open to like any and every idea that we throw at her. Like, I don't think she said no to anything. So we have an insane double coming up in a month or so that we're doing that I'm so excited about. It involves kangaroos. It's a lot of kangaroos.
Oh, I know what this is.
Yeah.
I think I asked for it on Twitter, actually.
Oh, I think you did. Yeah. Well, you're going to get it. Don't you worry. You'll get asking, you shall receive. But okay. Well, so John Carpenter, a Starman, the Master Carpenter series. I've already explained this like multiple times, but I feel like just once more, people, if they're confused why I'm starting a director series like seven movies into director's filmography, it's because Daniel had started the series on Cobwebs on the podcast, and the podcast is no more, but he's doing the YouTube channel. But you got up to Christine, which is an episode I was on with Carmelita and Preston, And so I am just taking over because we both, it was so funny because I texted Daniel and I was almost unpublished, like, but weird saying like, hey, could I take over Master Carpenter? Or did you say, we had the same idea basically. It was like, yeah, one of us was like, hey, can you want to take it over? And I was like, good. I was thinking that. I think that's how it went. And because John Carpenter was the, after Tony Scott, was got to be the second choice for director series. So it really kind of worked out that I was like, I'd be happy to take that over. And luck, I say luckily, we've only covered one other Carpenter movie post Starman, which is Prince of Darkness. I would have thought I would have done like two or three at minimum by now. So so yeah, that's why I'm starting at Starman. And I'm assuming there might be somebody who came over from Cobwebs who's never listened to the show, possibly. I don't know. So welcome if you come just from the Cobwebs podcast, you've never listened to this before. So we are not doing the pairing with an older movie, because this show goes on long enough. So it's like, let's just stick to the one movie and stuff we've seen lately. We'll do that too. So Daniel, thank you again. Let me like take over the reins for the Carpenter series. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. Anybody who talks about John Carpenter on podcasts, I have to like give written consent. So I appreciate you getting that. No, wouldn't that be insane if you like came to me and like, hey, can I do a John Carpenter series? And I was just like, no, you can't talk about one of the most popular directors of our time.
Well, to take the name and everything, you know what I mean? Yeah, I could have, there's a lot of legal documents.
I wanted to suggest it, but like, I mean, I didn't want to say like, hey, can you do my job for me? Like, you know, I'd appreciate that. But I was so glad you brought it up because I didn't want the series to go away, but I knew like running a podcast wasn't for me anymore, but I would love to still do this podcast. And your feed is just like a thriving podcast feed that a lot of people are on. And my podcast feed was dying, you know, listenership was dying off because I was just so inconsistent. So it's going to do so much better here. So I really appreciate you taking this on.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I guess we're thriving. I mean, especially in Canada, I feel like we broke the top 10 one week. I was like, yeah, we did it, Canada. Well, thank you.
That's it's because nice you're so see. Nice, Matt.
Well, thank
That's
you.
That's true. They like really nice people nice, up there.
Yes, yes.
That's true. They do. That's what I hear. still haven't gone. So we will still, this will be like a pretty normal film feast and we do the Master Carpenter show, but we will still talk about stuff we've seen lately. So Lexi, I'll let you go first to start with.
Oh, okay. I'll start with my most recent. It's starting to feel like a little springy here. And so I was inspired to watch Midsommar.
Oh.
Ari Aster the other night. I just don't think he's for me.
Fair.
Oh, well.
I watched Beau's Afraid as we Matt and I talked
about. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh boy.
And I like him as a visual like filmmaker, like the decisions to do a film in complete daylight and all of that stuff, and like all the clothing is so bright, all the people are white, obviously, because in Sweden, so it's like super super like crisp and like all the folklore in there and stuff like that. So that I really loved. I thought that was a very interesting take, but I just don't think the emotional levels of it quite click with me like it does with other people. I don't know.
It's understandable. That's fine. Ari Aster's just seems like a acquired taste, or could, yeah. After Beau Is Afraid, I don't know who's still, I mean, people might be off the ship at this point, but like, I'm still on board for whatever he makes. Cause I'm like, I'll
still watch his stuff.
Wacko around this crazy man. So,
yeah.
I really liked Midsommar. I thought it was very unique and different. And the whole idea of, like basically it's all just set in daytime. I think the extended cut add night scenes. I'm like, well, that just kind of defeats the purpose of like,
it's, I mean, like, that's kind of the whole point. It's supposed to be like day all the time. Right. Like,
right. Yeah. Like, yeah.
That totally undercuts what they're trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, Hereditary is still the best, even though I don't want to rewatch it probably anytime soon because it really messed me up. But, Daniel, what do you think about Midsommar? I don't know if your thoughts on that one.
I love Midsommar. I've never rewatched it. I just saw it in the theaters.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I thought it was great. I love like the Wicker Man type folk horror cult. Yeah. Kind of a thing. And Midsommar, some people kind of claim Midsommar is just like a ripoff of the Wicker Man, but I think that's dumb because it's just like, it's a horror subgenre, you know, like multiple horror movies can play in that sandbox. And I thought it was differentiated well enough especially in terms of a story level. I liked it. I liked the black comedy of it, the way it's kind of going for laughs in a really sick and twisted way. Love the cast. Love Florence Pugh. I'm overall like a big fan of Ari Aster because I love Midsommar and I love Hereditary. I've not seen Beau Is Afraid. I have no interest in Beau Is Afraid. Just very much does not seem like my kind of movie.
Yeah.
But if he makes like another horror movie of reasonable length, I'll absolutely watch it. But I don't have to be interested in every movie he makes. You know, that's okay with me.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed all the horror elements of it. Like, it was very effective. Like, the person hanging with the flowers in their eyes, like, that was insanely gross. Like, very, very effective. I just don't really like the Florence Pugh stuff and her boyfriend just being awful. I don't know. I just didn't really connect with that as much. But I did think it was very effective in the horror elements.
Yeah, it's pretty gross at times.
It's very
like
gross.
We were very shocked that scene, people were throwing themselves off the cliff near the beginning.
That's very, very, very gross.
Like, oof.
Yeah, that was a shocking moment. You know, part of like the conversation when Midsommar came out, I don't know if you guys remember it, like the conversation around it was insane.
Yep.
And one thing I thought was so annoying is so many people analyzing the ending and being like, is this morally right? Is this justified? And I'm like, dude, it's a horror movie with a shocking ending. Like, why are we like deciding whether one should do this to one's kind of lame at boyfriend? You know, like, no, you probably shouldn't do that. But like, it's a horror movie. So, you know,
bad things happen to people. It's like, that's kind of.
Isn't the whole thing is like she gets completely enmeshed in the cult. Like, that's kind of the idea, right? Okay, I'm not reading
right.
That
I mean, and the fact that they. Find people who are going through tough times or kind of weak to prey upon. And she's in a very vulnerable place with what's happened to her. So there was all that. There's a lot of talk about Midsommar too. Was like, is this like a girl boss ending? I was like, is that the conversation we should be having?
Has the girl boss conversation ended by now? I feel like it was big in like 2018.
I think it has. It has a completely different meaning now that it did then, at least.
Yeah.
Times change so fast.
I know, right? Yeah. What did come out? It was like 2018, wasn't it? Or something like that?
I think it was 19 because Hereditary was 18.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll never forget it. I came out the same weekend as a Spider-Man movie because I remember thinking it was so crazy that I walked, like, I saw Spider-Man one day and Hereditary the next. And I was like, this is weird. This is playing at my, like, local multiplex next to a Spider-Man movie.
Oh, Far From Home?
It was probably Far From Home. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I just thought it was very, very weird. But yeah, there's a lot of, like, you know, the movie came out. People were like, good for her. It's like, I don't know, good for her, because now she's in line with this crazy cult. It's a weird conversation around these movies, but I don't know. I'm very curious what he does next, because he just burned a lot of money from A24 with Beau Is Afraid.
Yes.
And I don't think anyone's gonna give him $50 or $60 million again to make.
They had to have known that wasn't gonna make money. Like, that had to have been a Killers of the Flower Moon situation where they're like, we want this guy in our sandbox, we'll let him do his thing, even though it's not gonna make us money.
Right. They must have. I hope they do.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no way. Apparently there was also like a 5-hour cut of Beau Is Afraid or something insane.
Oof. That was the first thing I heard about it when it was announced. It was like, I'm making a 5-hour comedy. And I was like, what? No. Are you sure you're not making a Netflix miniseries?
Yeah, that's what that sounds like. But yeah, it's interesting. Daniel, I don't think you would like it. So yeah, definitely avoid that.
Yeah.
So okay. Well, what else you got, Lexi?
Okay, I also watched this film called Amanda on Criterion. It was released last year. It was directed and written by the same person who wrote Fremont, which is another movie that came out last year. It's like this kind of coming to adulthood film. I think it's based in Italy, and she's like a stunted adult who's only friends with her housekeeper, and so she's like trying to become friends and find a boyfriend and be an adult. It's very funny. I was really not expecting it to be that funny, and it's very hilarious, and it has a great leading performance by the main actress, who was also, her name is Benedetta, and she was also in the movie Benedetta by Verhoeven, which is kind of funny. But yeah, it was really great. I heard about it, and it's just like a kind of a small movie, and I think Criterion put it out or something. It's like only on Criterion.
Is this an Italian remake of Amelie?
Uh, Not really.
It's okay. Not sounds a lot tight. Like it, but I was like, yeah, oh, it's Italy, but not France. Okay.
It definitely has those vibes, not quite as like surreal or like magical realism as that. But it does kind of like play in that like Wes Anderson, like, you know, scope a little bit in the way it kind of films everything and lights everything and the main actress's performance and like kind of tight close-ups on them as they're speaking their dialogue and going back and forth. So I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. I've never heard of this. I saw the poster now and I was like, oh yeah, I saw her tweet about this, but I've never heard of it. So you think it's only on the Criterion Channel? Is that what you said? Or
yeah, I think it's like released by them or something like that. I'm not entirely sure, but I think you can rent it and stuff too. But yeah, and Fremont is like a fantastic film it's like such different films, but very similar. But yeah, definitely check those out if you can.
Okay. And if anyone's searching for it, because it was not easy to search for, Amanda's from 2022. That helped me.
Yes.
I was like, okay, I saw the poster.
Yeah. I think it came out in Italy and then it came out here in last year. So it was like, you know, one of those like year delayed things.
Oh yeah. 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 That's pretty common. So, okay. That sounds interesting. I'd like to hear things I never heard about before. So that's good. So, anything else, or was that just the two things you want to talk about?
Also like another very similar in kind of a weird way is Fallen Leaves, which is something that a lot of people have been talking about. It's by Aki Kaurismäki. I don't know if I'm saying that name correctly, but I had never seen any of his films before, but like this was one that had got a lot of attention last year, and I think they were like thinking it was going to be nominated, or like it was put out there to be nominated. It's kind of like a love story, like a very normal day-to-day love story of these two people. This woman who's like got fired from her job, and this man who's like an alcoholic, you know, just construction worker. And it's also very dryly funny. It's very compact and to the point. And it's just like miscommunications and then like trying to reconnect and, and they end up falling in love at the end, but it's very sweet and very small. I don't know. I loved it. I thought it was just like such a sweet story and very wryly funny.
Okay, yeah. And I think I've heard about this too from a few people actually now. I think it's on Mubi, which I just remembered I had signed up for, like, Mubi was doing like 3 months for $1 or something.
Yeah, I did that too. Yeah. So I've been trying to watch as much of it as I know. I can.
I was like, oh shit, I gotta watch more stuff on Mubi before my dollar 3 month subscription ends, because I kind of forgot about it. I did it, watched like one thing, and then I was like, oh, I forgot about Mubi. There's too many streaming services. Like,
there are. Mubi is kind of like Criterion a little bit. Like, sometimes there's like some overlap. But yeah, this is on there. And hey, it's like an hour and 15 minutes, Matt. So, you know.
Oh, I was like, oh, hold on. Hour and 15 minutes. I'm listening. No, I actually may check that out, because I'm looking more stuff to watch on Mubi, and it's short. So that's a big selling point.
Yes, exactly. So.
Appreciate you putting it on my radar, because otherwise I would not probably have heard about it or thought about it that much. So good stuff. Okay. You and Carmelita always keep me up on like these obscure, weird things I've never heard of. So I appreciate that.
I go through like phases where I'm like, I need to watch these old movies who I haven't seen. And then I'm like, oh, I need to watch these new movies I haven't seen. Or I need to watch like comfort movies or like basketball.
You got me watching basketball, and then it got James watching basketball. It was like a basketball, like it's like a domino effect of people watching basketball. No, I'm all over the place too. I understand. I go through these phases of different things. So, okay, good stuff. Daniel, what about you?
Okay, I've got three things that I think people might be interested in. And the first one is another John Carpenter movie. And I think it's going to be an interesting one to bring up, because it's one that I've actually had a change of heart on. Because I'm working on a video right now on 90s vampire movies. So I rewatched John Carpenter's Vampires, because I hated it the first time I saw it. But I thought, like, I should make sure I hate it, because if it's not in this video, people will question why. And I rewatched it, and I liked it a lot more, actually. The thing that held me back on it the first time is I hated James Woods and Daniel Baldwin so much. Like, they're such detestable protagonists. But I don't know. This time I watched it, I think I was watching it even more as a Western, which I was the first time too, because it's unmistakably a Western. But I was very much watching them as like the gunfighter archetypes, like the bad men who get the dirty job done that needs to be done in order for society to function, but don't actually fit in society because they're a couple of dirtbags. And I don't know, they worked better for me like through that lens. I think the main thing about James Woods in the movie that bothers me at this point is just he has so many really stupid sex jokes that like make no sense and are out of nowhere. And he'll just randomly be like, that over there, that give you wood, huh? And you're just like, what? Like, what does that have to do with anything? I think that bothers me the most. But overall, like they bothered me a lot less. And I really enjoyed, like, I think the vampire action is good. But unlike a lot of other vampire action movies, I still think it works very well as a horror movie. And I think Valak is a really good, scary, very imposing vampire who will just like destroy everything in his path. And it's pretty awesome to see. So, and I just enjoyed like, it shot like a Carpenter movie. It's scored like a Carpenter movie. And I liked it a lot more. I still don't think it's amazing. I still think In the Mouth of Madness is Carpenter's last great movie, but I enjoyed it. And I could see myself rewatching it in the future, which I couldn't have said the first time I saw it.
Oh. It warms my heart. This is kind of a vampire's defender, even though, yes, those guys are pretty gross. But it was one of it had to be one of the first Carpenter movies I ever saw, because I saw on HBO too young, and it scared the crap out of me. Because Thomas Ian Griffith, I believe, from Karate Kid 3, who's like a giant man. He's super tall. He's like, and he's so imposing and intimidating as that lead vampire. And something happens very near the beginning of the movie that like shocked me. I will talk about it when we get to that movie. But and then whenever he shows up, I'm like, oh, it's like just sends like your a chill down your spine because he's scary to me. And then it is definitely a Western. Carpenter tried to get a Western in so many things that weren't technically Western. So there's a lot that I like about it. It has problems. And I think you're right that his last great movie is In the Mouth of Madness. But I think Vampires is still a good movie and still feels like a Carpenter movie. So I'm very happy to hear this. Very happy to hear this change.
It's a movie that makes me like feel nostalgic for movies like that like are just kind of like punchy and fun, and they're just like a singular story, and it's okay having the bad guy be bad or like the main character be bad, and we're totally okay with it. Like who cares about the morals of it, as we were talking about earlier? Like I think it's very fun.
And I also recognize that I think Daniel Baldwin has a decent character arc. Like he's definitely less of a dirtbag by the end than he is by the start. James Woods has no character arc, and like that's okay. He doesn't need
that's all right.
But Daniel Baldwin does, and I'm like, okay, like that's kind of something I can latch on to in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. James Woods' character arc is how many times can you say Padre in the runtime of Vampire?
And it keeps going up. He keeps finding more ways.
He's like, I'm gonna work it in every time I come. Telling John Carpenter, like, I'll get another Padre in here. I also like that guy that plays the priest that comes with them.
I do too.
Yeah,
I like by the end that James Woods makes another like, oh, you got wood joke, and he goes a little chubby, and that cracked me up.
Oh man! All right, well that's good stuff. Well, what else have you watched?
okay, so I watched the first Coffin Joe movie. Which is called At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul, which is like the most metal title you can imagine. it's from 1962. It's actually Brazil's first horror movie, which is pretty cool.
Whoa.
This guy, his name is like, his name is Juan something Marins. Anyway, he wrote the movie, directed the movie, stars in the movie as Coffin Joe. And it's weird because like the movie has like almost 10 out of 10, like spooky time, gothic atmosphere. Like at the beginning of the movie, it just starts with Coffin Joe giving a monologue about like death and blood. And then it goes into the opening credits, and overall the opening credits is the score is just like spooky sounds, women screaming, people going like, and it's so awesome. And then it goes to a witch and she gives a speech to the audience about how if you watch this movie, you're going to have a horrible time. So you should probably leave unless you're brave enough to watch it. And I'm like, this is great. Then when you get into the movie, the story is weird. It's just about Coffin Joe being a total asshole. And he really wants a son, but his wife is barren. So it's basically about him like torturing and killing anybody who could possibly get in the way of him getting a son and furthering his bloodline.
Whoa.
Which is like interesting because like for Brazil's first horror movie, I mean, he didn't use like any template that I've ever heard of. Like, I've never seen a horror movie about this. So it's like interesting that he didn't like make a vampire movie or make a haunted house movie. Mm-hmm. It does have some supernatural stuff by the end, but the movie's definitely low budget, slow at times, but not real slow. But it's interesting. And I've heard the next movie, which is called This Night I'll Possess Your Corpse, which is also an amazing title. I've heard that movie is like basically the same thing, but just like ramped up and crazier. So I'm looking forward to it. And the deaths, the murder scenes they're pretty savage. There's a scene where he just like ties up a woman and puts a tarantula on her until like it bites her and kills her. Like, it's just, they're crazy stuff. It's a weird movie, but it's actually, you don't actually don't have to buy the Coffin Joe box set if you don't want to, because it actually just hit Shudder too. So lots of people can now bask in the glory of Coffin Joe.
I've never heard of this before, but now I really want to watch these movies. Like, as you know,
you'd probably enjoy.
As on the other side of watching all these like kind of highbrow international films, it's like let's watch some tarantula biting women films.
Well, I feel like if I'm watching a bunch of highbrow stuff, then I want lowbrow, and then vice versa.
Yes,
it's like if I'm watching a bunch of lowbrow, then I want highbrow. Great titles, like unbelievable titles. I wish Ken Walker was here. I don't know why I always refer to his full name, but he's the first guy that told me about Coffin Joe a few years ago when I met him. He was like, "You heard of Coffin Joe?" I was like, "No." And he has like an older, I think, DVD box set that's literally in a cardboard box shaped like a coffin.
Ooh, that's cool.
So cool.
A good box set. And yeah, he loves those movies. I still been watching them, which is, I'm surprised he didn't show me one by now. But great names. Glad to hear they're on Shudder. Another streaming service I've kind of forgot that I have and haven't used in a while is Shudder. Dust that off. But okay, good. I'm glad to hear. Is there a video coming on those too?
Yeah. Okay. I don't know when, because it's a lot of movies in that box set. But yeah, there will be.
Okay. No pressure. I just wanted to scoop. I just wanted to know. Sorry, Lexi. I started talking.
Oh, I was going to say, those are like titles that are like look really great on a poster. And I'm looking up some posters and they're pretty amazing.
And I'll say, At Midnight, I'll Take Your Soul, not just the title, fits the movie. The movie delivers on the title.
I love that.
Love that. Yep.
Okay, so next up is a movie that every like March around St. Patrick's Day, I tell myself I'm going to watch. I never watch. I did it. I finally watched Leprechaun from 1993. I've never seen a Leprechaun movie these years.
There's so many more for you to enjoy.
I know.
You know, like, so the movie is like not bad. It's like decent. It's decently made. It's decently acted. The characters are like distinct enough. Famously, it's one of Jennifer Aniston's first movies, if not her first movie. And she like plays the same character as Rachel from Friends, really. It's just, I think I'm just not very interested in the idea of a leprechaun as a horror villain, which makes me like hesitant to check out the sequels, because I'm like, I don't think this is a topic I care about. And it's weird that like the movie's not a comedy, but Warwick Davis as the leprechaun is in a comedy. And like Warwick Davis is great, and like the movie probably would not work without him.
Yeah.
It's weird that like the horror of the movie is the only goofy thing in the movie. And like pretty much everything else is normal. But then like the horror is like the dumbest part, which makes like the third act my least favorite part, because that's when we're getting into like the horrors ramping up. And it's kind of hard to care, because like you just can't take it even seriously.
Yeah.
So I gave Leprechaun 2.5 stars. Like, it's okay. It's decent enough, but it's not my thing.
Probably about what I gave it, I think. That series is weird, because it starts off like, it's going to sound silly, more grounded, and then it gets less and less grounded as it goes on.
It goes to space.
Like, yeah, the fourth one, he's in space. Yeah, like... I actually think they get more entertaining at 3, because 1 and 2 are kind of, I don't know, just kind of like whatever. And then 3 is like in Vegas, which is a fun setting for him. Somehow I watch like most of these. 4 is in space, which is ridiculous. 5 and 6, I think, are the 2 like Leprechaun in the Hood movies.
Yes.
I think
you're right. Yeah.
Are ludicrous. I remember watching those on a vacation with some friends. We'd all been drinking and they were great for that. Like, they were great for that, but they're not good movies. But, the leprechaun's such a silly concept. I feel like you have to put him in more ridiculous situations, because
the more ridiculous it is.
Right. Because one's taking him seriously.
He's in rural North Dakota at a farmhouse. And I'm like, interesting.
It's like the most blah, boring location. I remember that. I was like, this is not a very exciting location. But interesting. Jennifer Aniston before Friends, like in that movie. And but they come more entertaining. They're not good, yeah, but they're more entertaining as they go along.
Okay.
Like, so, okay. Let me know if you're watching more Leprechaun movies. I'm excited.
I'll let you know. They're all on Peacock.
Oh, nice, wow. To see. Major coup for Peacock, because like, all the Leprechaun movies. Okay, I have four, but I'll go through them pretty quickly. Like, because just, especially the first one. I watched Aquaman 2 or Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom,
I think.
Yeah, I was like, what's... It's not very good. It's like,
oh, too bad.
I really liked the first Aquaman.
Yeah, I love like, the first one. It's so fun.
The weird thing is, like, this is still James Wan. It's like a lot of the same people. I think this movie just got, like, messed with to death by Warner Brothers in DC because it's at the end of the line of their superhero movies where they reboot. And I heard it got... There were major, major reshoots and, like, things got changed. It, you can feel it a little bit. And it's weird because, like, I like Jason Momoa overall and I like his Aquaman, but he was, like, kind of annoying to me in this movie, even though it's, like, it's weird. He's doing the same thing. He's doing, like, his, like, hang loose, bro. Like, he's just kind of like, woo, I'm Aquaman, having fun. And, like, I found him kind of... The villain stuff was more interesting to me than the stuff with Aquaman. Like, the Black Manta comes back and, like, I actually like his storyline. And, like, that's more interesting to me than what's going on with Aquaman. I mean, it's weird. Like, for every cool moment James Wan pulls off, there's, like, another moment that's kind of awful. So it's, like, it's like this push and pull of, like, oh, that's cool. That feels like a 50s, like, Harryhausen sci-fi movie. Or this feels like a... I think I heard he, like, did, like, some... that Bava Planet of the Vampires movie, like, was influencing. I've seen stills from that. And I was like, okay, I see that in Aquaman 2. Like, he's pulling all these weird influences. And it's... It has all this energy, but I don't know. It's... I just didn't really enjoy it. It felt like it dragged on. It was not that long. Maybe the funniest thing and that I've seen all year in anything, though, is Patrick Wilson's character comes back and him and Jason Momoa are running away from some guys. And Patrick Wilson's trying to run. And because he's lived in the ocean his whole life, he doesn't know how to run. So his arms are like hanging by his side, just like flapping around. And Jason Momoa's like, why are you running like that? He's like, I've never ran before. And it's like the best gag I've seen. I was like, that's a great, a funny bit. So there's stuff to like in Aquaman. It's on HBO.
I heard that like the buddy stuff was the better part of the movie.
Yeah, that stuff is. And Patrick Wilson's like probably one of like, kind of steals the movie a little bit. Because he's just really good. It's just, it's a weird movie that feels like it got pulled in 10 different directions. Yeah. And I like James Wan a lot. I mean, there's still stuff to admire about his directing in this, but it's just, you can tell it's just, they did not have a good time and did not get to see what they wanted to do. So, I mean, it's on HBO Max. So, I mean, if you feel like it's not like, I'm not saying skip it, but I just think it's just like, oh, that's a bummer that it like is not as good as it could have been, I guess. So, okay. So that's Aquaman 2. That's all I have to say. And then, okay. I watched a movie that you would think it's like Casablanca or Citizen Kane. Whenever I bring it up, people are like, you've never seen that? And I finally watched it last night because hang out with my sister, my brother-in-law, and my new nephew. It's like a week old. And he was asleep, so he wasn't doing anything. So we were watching a movie while he was hanging out. 10 Things I Hate About You. I finally watched 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, my gosh.
This is the reaction. Like even my brother-in-law, who I thought didn't care, and he was like, you've never seen that movie?
Everyone, men, women, everyone loves that movie.
I know. I have learned that because every time I bring it up, I get this reaction of like, are you kidding me? Everybody is always like shocked. So I finally rectified that and watched it. I thought it was great. I really liked it. Like, amazing cast of all these people who were like just becoming famous or hadn't quite broke yet. It's really funny. It was very charming. Made me really nostalgic for all like the late 90s teen movies. Because I like all those. I grew up on those. Like, She's All That and Can't Hardly Wait and all those kind of things. And like, this fits right in there. So I don't know why I didn't see it. And my sister loved it. So I like had to actively avoid watching it because we lived in the same house for quite a while. I don't know. It was great. I really liked it. It's very 1999. Oh my God. I was like, I put in a time machine and gone back. Like,
soundtrack is so good.
Yes, that soundtrack is amazing.
Soundtrack is great.
As someone who grew up loving ska, that great soundtrack.
It's Oh my God, everything about it is so 1989. I loved it. I wanted more. It was like, give me more 1989 vibes. I have nothing new to add to the the discussion of 10 Things I Hate About You. I'm just glad I finally watched it. And now I don't have to have that reaction when I tell people I haven't seen it. So
our friendship officially starts here, Matt.
Okay. This is good. I'm glad to hear it. Finally.
Did you know about the cast, or were you just constantly like, oh my gosh, there's that person, there's that person, there's that person?
I did know about the cast for the most part, but like seeing like Gabrielle Union pop up super young. Yeah. I didn't know she was in it. Who else? A couple people that were surprised by
The counselor. Allison
Janney.
Yes.
My sister writing an erotic novel.
Yes. Openly. Oh my God. That first scene is so good. Oh
my God. Amazing. I was in right away at that first scene. But Allison Janney, my sister pointed out, it's weird that she's in like the first part of the movie, and then I think you never come back to her, unless I'm forgetting something. Like, there's
she pops back.
I think she comes in because he has to go see her. I think
she has. Julia Stiles has to go see her for sure.
Maybe it's like she's maybe at the back end of the movie. She's out because she does come back, but it's like you see her at the beginning, in the first half, but then like you think they'd follow up at the very end and be like, "I finished my book" or something.
Yeah.
Julia Stiles gives her some word for engorged
member. Pulsating member. I've seen this movie a lot.
It's very funny.
I have this soundtrack on vinyl.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's good. Yes. It's a good soundtrack.
It's a great soundtrack.
I really liked it. It'll probably be one of my, when I do my little favorite discoveries of the month, it'll be on there, I'm sure, because I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I finally watched it. So, I'm knocking off some big ones off my haven't seen list, because I saw Ratatouille recently, which I never.
Oh my gosh, did you talk about that? I may have missed it.
I don't know if I ever brought it up in a what have you seen lately. It was right before I went to Disney.
Did you like it?
I really liked it. Yeah. It was like, cool. Listen, Ratatouille and 10 Things About You, 4 stars. So 4 stars out of 5. So really liked them. I thought my girlfriend was gonna like break up with me. She's like, I haven't seen Ratatouille or Finding Nemo or 10 Things I Hate About You. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I was watching The Matrix 50 times. I didn't have time.
Is she younger than you? Is she like a little closer to my age? Maybe?
Only 1 year younger than me.
So. Oh, okay. Because these are all movies that are like, I feel like real big for my age, but maybe not for yours. Old man.
My sister is maybe a year or two older than you, I think, or maybe a year older. So it's all kind of in the same range. If you have older, younger siblings, I feel like things like bleed over. So, I told her the Pixar thing is like, because there's a defining line of the Pixar movies. It's like, I think Toy Story 2 comes out in 2000. And I think that was like the last one I saw in a theater. Because in 2001, I started high school.
That's the third one. So you only saw 3.
Oh, that's right. like 2001, I didn't see them in theaters because I was starting high school and I was like, I'm too cool for animated movies. Like, you know, I'm edgy and I'm gonna watch like Tarantino movies. Like, these are for babies. And and then I went back and we saw WALL-E, me and my sister, and I was like, oh, I was too hard on these Pixar movies. What was I missing out on all these years? And like, so now I'm catching up on like Ratatouille. I still haven't seen Finding Nemo, which is another one that blows people's minds. I did see The Incredibles a while ago. And then there's a couple other ones, but like,
wow,
I'm trying to
just
catch
a while ago.
Yeah, it was before 2 came out, because I was dating somebody at that time who was like, you haven't seen The Incredibles, so the second one's coming out, we gotta go. And I was like, okay, I'll watch The Incredibles. So
I probably have The Incredibles memorized. Like, we watched it on repeat when we were kids, over and over.
Yeah, it was just that, it was that time period. I was trying to explain, like, I just thought I would be like thinking like, oh, Finding Nemo, that's for kids, I'm not gonna see that. Like, that was my mindset. Because I was so cool in high school that I couldn't see Pixar.
I even saw like Tangled in theaters when I was like in college, I think.
Yeah.
Tangled is good. It's probably like the last like romance Disney will ever allow in one of their princess movies again, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
Tangled. Well, I did see Tangled at some point. Someone showed me Tangled and it was really good. I liked it. I'm trying to catch up on all these like mainstream movies that I have not seen and correcting my mistakes.
Are you going to see Finding Nemo next?
I think that will be next. I wanted to see it before I went to Disney.
It's so beautiful. If you have like a big TV, I'm sure it's going to look so gorgeous.
It's like, probably my favorite Pixar. Like, honestly, Finding Nemo and Ratatouille are probably my two favorites.
Well, there you go. I knew I had to see Ratatouille because there's a Ratatouille ride at Epcot that like it's kind of new-ish.
And cool.
She was like, you won't understand the ride if you don't have seen Ratatouille.
That's so fun. Does it smell like food when you go through the ride?
Here's the funny thing. It's supposed to smell like food, but it had been broken part of the day. And when we got on, we all got off, and then we were like, is it not did anyone smell any food smells? We're like, no, we found out later that part was still broken, apparently.
The smells
were broken.
Oh, man. Why are they making a Ratatouille ride? Like, there should be a Ratatouille restaurant.
You would think.
Yeah, that seems very odd. Whatever, but
I know it's in the French part of Epcot.
Yeah.
It looks like a restaurant. It's a very cool looking, like, outside of the ride in France and Epcot. And the ride's basically like you're in a car that looks like a little rat, and you like zoom around to different screens, and it's in like 4D. So, like, they shoot some water at you. There's like a part where you go under an or in an oven, like, it gets hot and they move you around. Like,
well,
it's a fun ride.
That's fun.
Yeah, we almost missed it because it was closed for like a long time. And we were like, we got to ride the Ratatouille ride. It opened up near the end of the day. We got to go on it. So it didn't, there was no smells though. There's supposed to be food smells.
No
smells. No smell-o-vision. So
have you seen A Bug's Life? This is another, I'm just going to ask.
Okay. Now that's in the time when I would have been watching these, but somehow I missed it.
You just saw Toy Story 1 and 2. That's it.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly.
I should have said like just all Disney and Pixar movies were out. But I was saying Pixar, but like not seeing animated movies from like 2001 to like 2008 for some reason.
No, I had that cutoff too. For me, the cutoff was Ratatouille. That was the first Pixar movie I did not go see in theaters, and I caught up with later and loved.
Yeah.
But I mean, we all hit that age where we just kind of stop watching them until we figure out like, oh, I do still like these movies. I'm okay with like not being a big boy now, you know, like I'm too old for this. And then that stops mattering.
I get over that whole I'm too cool. I can't be seen by anyone at a animated movie at high school, like, but then I thought, wait, if they saw me there, they'd be there too. And you know, it's like I got over that at a certain point. Now I'll go see anything. Although I probably wouldn't go see an animated movie by myself as an adult. It might be a little weird if like I walk in and just me as myself. It's like, hey, just single adult man here. Don't it's not weird.
I mean, I have, to be honest with you.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know, you look more friendly than I do. Oh, I'm pretty friendly. I don't know why. Just it makes me. I'm probably more self-conscious or thinking about anybody else is. But I'm like, I can't go to this animated kids movie by myself. But hey, I have a nephew now, so a couple more years.
There you go.
Just take him along.
Take
I want to go see the new
He's
Pixar.
Sleep.
That's yeah. He, oh,
He's
he does
just your
sleep.
Excuse.
I always tell my sister, I was like, he'll never be this peaceful again because he just sleeps and then wakes up to get a bottle and then back to sleep and get a diaper change. I'm like, this is not that bad. She's like. Yeah. Another month or two and it won't be this easy.
I know.
So, but
in the beginning I could watch like movies all day long and he just sits on me and sleeps and those days are long gone.
I held him for like the entirety of 10 Things I Hate About You. He did not like move. He moved like an arm or a leg. I was like, you're just chilling.
That's so cute.
I was like, this is great. Okay. Two more things really quick. So I'm still on a Clint Eastwood directing kick that I've been on for like 2 years because this came up last week on the Showdown Little Tokyo episode about Clint Eastwood. And I'm like, I'm definitely in my like old man dad phase because I'm like, yeah, Clint Eastwood movies are the best. And I watched one that I feel like people talk about when it came out a little bit, but I just no one talks about it anymore, called Changeling with Angelina Jolie.
What? That's the one you get to watch?
I got a few in the mail. I bought some Clint Eastwood Blu-rays, and I was like, I'll go with Changeling. I don't know why, but
Matt, it's not Angelina Jolie; it's George C. Scott.
I know that is confusing when you bring it up. So apparently, his Clint Eastwood one is called Changeling. George C. Scott is the Changeling.
There you go.
There's the difference. But I didn't know what to expect from Changeling. I was like, I'll watch it because I bought the Blu-ray for like $5 on eBay, and I thought it was really good. I thought it was
really?
Yeah. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
I didn't like it
at all.
Oh, okay. Well, let me.
It also just feels like something is like that is completely forgotten in time a little bit.
And she was nominated for like Best Actress for that.
Yeah, I think
had some other Academy Award nominations. I thought she was really good.
And
the premise is I think really good about, and it's based on a true story apparently. So
yeah, it is based on a true story.
This woman in LA in the 20s, I believe, is it 20s or the 30s, and her son goes missing one day, and then they can't find him, and then I can't remember what passage of time is, like a month, I think 6 months, I think is the passage of time, and they're like, we found your son, and they bring her to this train station to meet her son. The kid gets on the train. It's not her son. She's like. Yeah. Telling people this is not my son, and they're like, no, it's been 6 months, you just don't remember, like you've been through a lot. And the kid's acting like her son, just take him home. And then, like, with this strange kid in the house, yeah. where she's like, I gotta take care of this kid, but he's not my kid.
Sounds like Orphan First Kill.
Oh my god. A little bit. A Slock and All Double Feature, Changeling and Orphan First Kill. But I don't know. The premise, I think, is so interesting, because, like, where you're telling everybody, especially at the time, it's harder to prove in the 20s about, you know, mm-hmm. it's your kid or not. And you're a woman, everyone's telling, all these men are telling you you're being hysterical, you know, and then, like, they're, so she's just, she has no, it's harder for her to prove, but she's finding people. She's going, like, his teacher and, like, yeah. I think his doctor, and they're like, that's not your son. Like, I will go and yeah. tell people it's not your son. And they throw her in a mental institution because the yeah. LAPD basically has such a bad reputation at this time that they are just doing anything they can to, like, make themselves look better. Yep. So they've concocted this whole thing. And they were just like, we'll just throw her in this mental institution and she won't be able to talk. And, you know, well, you know, and then there's even more after that, which the movie kind of, like, I think kind of falls apart, but kind of, like, yeah. goes on a little too long, because there's a whole kind of, like, third, like, last third where I'm like, do we need this last third of the movie where it's kind of like yeah. the aftermath of all this that's happening? Although it wraps up the very last 10 minutes, it wraps up, I think, kind of nicely. But I really liked it. I did not say the kind of thing I would like.
That, I mean, I'm happy you liked it. It's good that you liked it. I just felt like it was, like, such a weird movie. I just remember this quote about him saying that the reason he picked Angelina Jolie is because she has a real face, and that's what they look like in the 20s. And I was like, she does not have a real face. She has, like, the most unreal face I've ever seen in my life.
No one looks like Angelina Jolie.
No one looks like
her. I mean,
like,
that's a compliment,
no.
too, but it's like...
Yeah, exactly.
I do weirdly feel like she fits in at that time, though. Maybe it's the costuming and everybody...
Oh,
I don't
yeah,
know.
A great costuming.
It's, they do a great job with, like, recreating that period, yeah. too. I feel like it's 08, so it's like he's still shooting on film. Yeah. They're still using a lot of practical stuff, like, to make things look like the 20s. I thought it looked
and
beautiful.
He always gets the budget he wants because he always comes in under budget and, like, does it really fast. So it's like...
Yeah.
You know,
it's I know I because sometimes I like Clint Eastwood, but he's gotten kind of I don't want to say lazy in his later yeah. movies, but sometimes it feels like they're kind of like, okay, we did one take and yeah. we're done, like, because he's, like, notorious for, like, he does a take, he moves on,
yep.
you're doing, like, a normal 8 to 5 on the movie set and you're out. But Chaney still felt well directed to me. I thought, yeah, Angelina Jolie was great. I don't know, I really liked it. I was really into the whole story, so I don't know. I
Well, I'm happy you liked it. Well, you're the number one Changeling fan in the world.
I guess I am now, because no one else is talking about Changeling. Oh, Daniel, I guess you have not seen this movie.
No, I'm more of a The Changeling kind of guy.
Understandable. The Changeling is still better. The George E. Scott Changeling is still a better movie. But I think Changeling is good. Me and Lexi disagree. It's okay.
It can happen from time to time.
Like Siskel and Ebert with the two thumbs up, or thumb up, thumb down on Changeling. So... okay, last thing. This also might be controversial that I liked. I don't know, but it's a movie that I had held so much bias against for years and didn't want to see it, and finally watch it and ended up really loving it. Dances with Wolves. Kevin Costner's Dances with Wolves.
Yes, that this movie needs defending, so please have at it.
Listen, I love Goodfellas. It's probably like a top 10 all-time movie. I love Goodfellas. And I had this thing for years where it's one of those things where, like, Dancing with Wolves beat Goodfellas for Best Picture. And one of those things people always, like, they messed up. You know, I don't really care what the Academy thinks, you know. But it's like people get mad about those kind of things. And I was like, oh, I can't believe they're Goodfellas. F you, yeah. Dancing with Wolves. Like, I don't... And then, like, everyone said it's really long and really boring. And, like, I didn't think I was a Costner guy. But, like, then I'm like, maybe I like Costner more than I think. And I'm really excited for Horizon coming out this summer. Talk about a guy just spending money to make his epic. My god. Like, Ari Aster and Beau Is Afraid. Kevin Costner's like, put it all in on Horizon. So I was like, I saw the Horizon trailer, I was like, I gotta watch Dances with Wolves and make my own decision of my own mind on this. And I really, really liked it. It's a beautiful movie. It's incredibly well made. It's like, I do think it is too long, and apparently there's an even longer cut that's almost 4 hours long.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
But I kind of enjoyed it over, like, a whole yeah. day. Like, I took my time with it. Like, I had to kind of start and stop it a few times because I was doing stuff for work during this, and, like, it took me almost, like, the whole day to kind of get through it. But I kind of just let it, like, breathe and, like,
yeah,
I just really enjoyed it, that kind of pace almost. Like, and one thing that really was like, ugh, Kevin Costner's narration, his voiceover. I don't like his voiceover because I feel like it's not well done. And it just sounds like he's like reading it in a booth, like at gunpoint. Cause I feel like it just, he's like very monotone. You know, I don't know. That was my one like sticking point, but everything else I really enjoyed. Like,
inspiring me to watch this because I saw you watch this and I was like, oh, you know, I should watch that because I haven't seen that since I was younger because I was grew up in like a very heavily Kevin Costner household. Like we would watch Robin Hood, this Waterworld, like all the time, but I haven't seen it, I think, since I was like maybe 10 or 11 or whatever. So
we joke about it all the time, or just talk about it, where it's like, oh, movies are not made that well anymore. And then you watch Dancing with Wolves where he went out to like Wyoming and the Dakotas and shot stuff for real, and like it's like unbelievable, like I just how good it looks. And I know I really was into the whole thing, the whole story. I know it has some problems, like kind of like people talk about the white savior aspect and all that stuff, which I thought was interesting because I feel like he doesn't do much for them, they do more for him. But the whole idea of like you have to have a white guy to front your movie to get it made about of Native course, Americans, yeah. And he, of course, he falls in love with the only other white woman in the tribe. It's like,
yes,
you know, that kind of little stuff like that. But I'm like, overall, I'm really into the story.
Yeah,
I think it's a really super well made movie. I really enjoyed it. So I thought it was great. So Daniel, I know you got your like you want to say some stuff. So go ahead.
Yeah, that was my biggest surprise about the movie, that he falls in love with like a white woman, because I feel like the template for these movies, you know, like Avatar or whatever, like they always fall in love with like a native woman, you know. Mm-hmm. And then when it was just some random other white woman who was there, I was like, oh, that's a little different. Interesting.
Yeah.
I watched it a few years ago too, and I loved it. It's a movie that like I don't know if I'll ever watch it again because it's so long. And I think that's okay. You know, some movies are so long, they're not rewatchable movies. Not everything is. But I did love it. I thought it was great. I don't agree with the white savior arguments. I kind of feel like that comes from people who like haven't seen the movie. They're just like, oh, a movie about Native Americans starring Kevin Costner. It's kind of, it's the same thing as The Last Samurai with Tom Cruise, where they're like, oh, Tom Cruise is the last samurai. And you watch the movie, you're like, no, it's not. He's just the star of the movie, but he's not the last samurai. So it's kind of the same thing. But I certainly don't have that problem with the movie, but I think it's great. I love Kevin Costner in the movie. I do think, though, to like disagree with you slightly, this is one of the rare kind of 90s movies they do still make. Like they do still make super long historical epics that are like beautifully made. They don't make like shorter ones that are like entertaining for everyone anymore.
Yeah. I always think of The Patriot. Like, I've watched The Patriot 20 billion times, and, like, that was one of my favorite movies until realized Mel Gibson was horrible. It was, like, that is, like, a perfect, like, moving fast, like, historical epic.
Yeah, like, true. For the masses.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Including me. I'm not saying that snootily. I am the masses.
Exactly. But, like, we got, like, a ton of, like, Napoleon last year, Oppenheimer, like, Killers of the Flower Moon. These are, like, all kind of, like, epic historical, although they have like there's a little bit more you know genre in there, but like
big right now. It seems to be a big subgenre.
Yeah,
that's true. That is fair. I was thinking like to look as good as Dancing with Wolves does, I still feel like it's like a little bit above even some of the newer ones, and maybe just because how it shot or how things looked that time. But the whole white savior thing, I feel like I shouldn't speak on that as a white guy. Like that should be other people's decision to make. But I was thinking to myself, he doesn't do much saving in Dancing with Wolves.
No.
He just is like their neighbor who becomes part of the tribe and then literally helps them out big time during one battle. But it's like mostly just him giving them guns. And then, I mean, mild spoilers, they kind of save him near the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And it's very critical of the U.S. military look like monsters in that movie. Which I thought was funny too, Clint Eastwood, who's like, I always think of as a conservative filmmaker, and he like just shits all over the LAPD. Like he in Changeling.
Interesting.
Like, it's so these guys who I sometimes think is like conservative filmmakers, like crapping all over like institutions. I don't know. It's a whole, I don't want to go too, but this whole thing, Clint Eastwood, like he's done a few things where it's like, oh, he's like really painting this like institution in a bad light. And Kevin Costner makes the U.S. military look terrible. Dates with Wolves, like they are like just assholes. Like, they're shooting animals for no reason.
Yeah.
Just terrible. So yeah, I thought it was interesting, that whole thing, to read about it. People just don't like Games with Wolves. Like, you read the Letterboxd reviews and people just, it does kind of feel like people haven't watched it almost. Like, where I'm like, have you watched the movie? Yeah. I don't know. It definitely is long. It takes patience, but I had patience the day I watched it. I don't know. I felt like I was like, I'm fine with this pace. I got nowhere to go. Like, I'm
how
just
long
like,
is it?
Just...
is it like 2.5 hours?
It is.
No, it's like 3 to 3.5.
It's like three on the dot, I think. Like, the theatrical version is like exactly 3 hours, I think.
Yeah. I think I have the director's cut. I think that's all that's on Blu-ray. So maybe you streamed it?
I watched it on like Prime or AMC Plus or whatever.
Okay, yeah. Like, I think the only version you get on Blu-ray is the director's cut. And that's how I've seen it. And I think it is 4 hours.
Wow.
Well, I can clarify. So I would watch the movie, went on Amazon. I was like, I need to own this movie. And there's a 4K from Shout Factory that was under $15, and it has a theatrical and the director's cut.
Oh, that's got to be newer, but that's awesome.
I think it is newer. It's this like beautiful steel book. I was like, oh, under $15 for a 4K of this, like, because I want to see this movie in 4K. So, yeah, I don't know how much I'll rewatch it, but I was like, I will probably rewatch this at least once or twice in my life at some point. So
it's good to just to have as like a piece of media that's important, you know.
Yes, as we learn all the time. It's better to own pieces of media than to like rely on streaming, because you never know. Even like bigger movies now just like disappear and are not streamable. It's very weird. But yeah, Dance with Wolves, pretty good movie. If anyone was holding a bias against it like I was, like, give it a shot. It's pretty good. Okay, so let's talk about John Carpenter and Starman. Very excited about this. Because I've only seen Starman once before we're watching it for this podcast, and I'll just say it right up front, I think it's still like in my top five John Carpenter movies, because I absolutely love this movie. So I'm curious with you guys, what your, I'll start with you, Lexi, your history with Starman. Yeah. You'd seen it like just recently or like a long time ago, or?
So I feel like I hadn't seen this movie, and then I was like, no, I have seen this movie, but I couldn't remember where I had. But I feel like it's really likely that my mom had this, watched this at some point, and I watched it with her, because she's a big Jeff Bridges fan, and so I feel like that's how I found it. And I found a copy at Goodwill, a DVD at Goodwill, like, I don't know, a couple years ago. I was like, I just want to have this because I know I'm going to want to watch this at some point. And I'm glad I did, because I was able to watch it for this, rewatch it for this. But yeah, it's probably, I really love this movie. I feel it's like such an outlier in his filmography, but it's like, so it's like such an important one.
Yes.
Because it kind of, It's like this humanistic piece of work from him. I mean, he is very humanistic, but it's like very, very, like, not a ton of effects, very based in the interactions between the leads.
Yes, that's a very good way to put it. And I was thinking it's so different than anything else he ever did before or after. So yeah, we'll definitely talk about that more. So I'm glad to hear that you like it so much. And Daniel, your thoughts on Starman, like or when you first saw it, I guess, and what you think of it.
I saw it a few years ago. I like showed it to my family, because I remember I rented the DVD from the library, and I was like, for some reason I was at my family's house, and I was like, let's watch this. And I don't remember it making a big impression on me, and it could be because my family wasn't into it. I do not come from a John Carpenter family. It's so hard for me to get them to get into anything Carpenter, except when I showed my little brother The Thing and he flipped for it. That was great.
That's good.
That's like the only time. And then I rewatched it. I think it was last year when I did like my like major John Carpenter binge, and I was just like watching everything. I got the Blu-ray and watched it. And I really, really fell in love with it on a second watch. Loved it so much. And one thing I love about it, just say briefly, is like, it is definitely an outlier in Carpenter's filmography in terms of like script and the story, but it still so much looks and feels and sounds like a Carpenter movie, which is something that, like, as a comparison, Wes Craven didn't have. When he did an outlier, it was an outlier. Like, you could not even tell it's Wes Craven. But like, I love that John Carpenter always keeps his style no matter what he's doing. That's something that's great about it.
Yeah, it still looks incredible. Like, it still like looks as good as all his other movies do. Because I was, it's like he doesn't do the score for this, which is unusual for him. It's not do the score. It's a guy named Jack Nietzsche, who did some good stuff. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Cruising, and I got to mention Tony Scott's Revenge was one. I was like, oh, Tony Scott's score. I really like the score.
It totally fits into his like musical aesthetic, I guess. Definitely. You could say, like, how he likes to make music. It's absolutely feels like he is paying so much homage to Carpenter.
Yeah, so yeah, I kind of had to totally check agree. The first time. I was like, this isn't a Carpenter score? Because it really sounds like he could have done this score. I mean, I'm assuming Jack Nietzsche was like, well, let me try to kind of do what I think John Carpenter might do for this. I don't know if that's true, but that sure is what it feels like. Because, yeah, it definitely had that vibe of him. Yeah, it all feels like a Carpenter movie. But, like, just because he's usually so, what's the word? He's, like, very... not downtrodden, but kind of like a lot of his movies that kind of end like downbeat, like They Live and In the Mouth of Madness and The Thing, Prince of Darkness. Like, usually his movies are not like this hopeful. Like, I think he's a pessimist by just, I think he'll admit he's a pessimist.
It's so funny. I was watching this interview with him and he said he's a long-term optimist, but a short-term pessimist.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Which I think was just such a funny way. And he was like, yeah, I really thought about that during They Live because, you know, I feel like that's like exactly the world we're living in. And I was like, oh, that's such an interesting way to describe yourself, as thinking like, in the end, everything's going to be okay. But right now I feel like everything's going to be awful.
I can kind of agree with that, like relate to that, because like, I'm generally a guy who's like, you know, I think everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to work out. But it, you know, if you like ask me if I think the next election is going to go great, I'm like, I probably not. Not really.
Probably not. Well, I don't know. I feel like I'm actually more optimistic in the short term and I'm more worried about the long term.
Okay. Like, interesting.
Like, where I'm like, think it's like, we'll survive this, whatever, couple of years or whatever, you know, but long term, I'm like, oof.
We'll survive this, but we're definitely gonna die.
Yeah, someone's gonna get us down the road. If it ain't today, it'll be in 50 years from now. But just, you know, climate change and all that kind of stuff, it's like you worry about where you're like, it's like a short time it'd be okay, but like long term, like I don't know. But that actually makes sense for John Carpenter, him saying that. But because at the end of Escape from LA with what Snake Plissken does, it's just like so like,
great.
It's so great. It's so great, but it's so grim too. It's just like, oh man.
I don't think I've seen Escape from LA. I think that's like might be one of the few I haven't seen.
It's so good.
I've seen Escape from New York, but not Escape from LA.
Escape from LA is very fun. I think you would like it. There's some real, real wonky CGI. But if you just erase that.
Are you an Escape from New York fan, Lexi?
I am. I do love it.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, I love pretty much everything Carpenter does. I mean, except for maybe the last couple movies, but like, I'm all in pretty much.
Yeah, there's really, I mean, there's only a couple where I'm like, oh, I don't want to podcast on that. But overall, I'm like, no, this will be good. Or I'll podcast on it, but I'm not going to be nice to say.
Your like, what we've watched lately section is going to be like heavily, very heavily featured in those episodes. And then you're going to talk about the movie for like 20 minutes.
10 minutes. No, we'll see if Daniel's here and he likes it, maybe that'll balance me out. We'll see. If we both don't like the movie, who knows what will happen. but there's always something interesting in all of his movies.
Yeah.
And like, and Starman, I think I looked back on Letterboxd. I just saw it for the first time sometime during 2020, which is always a weird time. And I was like immediately taken by it because I was just like, wow, this is so different from any John Carpenter we've ever seen before. And I'm sure I would not have appreciated it much when I was younger because it is heavily a adult romance movie, like between two adults an alien who's, I don't know, a child who became an adult in 2 minutes. I don't, that's a whole thing. But like poor Karen Allen just, you know, grieving in the depths of grief. Like it's hard to relate to when you're younger, I think. But I loved it. Today I loved it just as much the first time I watched it when I was seeing it. I did forget that John Carpenter still seeks a little bit of horror in there because I find that transformation scene after Jeff Bridges shows up.
Yeah.
When he goes from like baby to man to be just very
very unsettling.
It's unsettling.
Yeah.
Like,
But it's fantastic piece of work, but it is like very, it's like very hard to watch stuff like that.
And yeah, and poor Karen Allen in the movie is just watching.
I know.
Like, what do you do if you've seen that? How do you, like, she, well, she passes out, I guess. That's what she does. But
I think Karen Allen is like very good in this role of being someone who has to deal, who's really good at portraying someone who's dealing with these like very supernatural circumstances, but in a real way. Like, I feel like that's something that she is like really fantastic in this movie.
Yes. Yeah. Daniel, your thoughts? Karen Allen. What do you think of Karen Allen in this movie?
Oh, I love Karen Allen in this movie. And I do, I love that opening transformation or birth kind of sequence.
Yeah.
And I love that it happens. And I love that Karen Allen sees it. So yeah, we never have to waste time in this movie where she's like, you're not an alien. Come on, tell the truth.
Yeah.
We never have to deal with that because she just sees this insane thing. She's like, okay, I'm dealing with an alien, like, or something worse, but probably an alien.
Yeah.
So that's great. And yeah, she's awesome. I wish she had like, you know, more great iconic movies from the 80s and such that we could like, you know, celebrate her with. And there's not that much, but I love that, you know, we got Starman here. Love that Carpenter casts her because, you know, she wasn't in really a ton of movies. And she's just great at being like very likable and relatable while also being like sad and tired and just not wanting to deal with the situation of the movie, but still being like very engaging, someone we want to relate to. And she's just super, super grounded, which is good because Jeff Bridges is not at all, you know? So she's like a really good counterpoint to him.
That's very good points. Yeah. That she sees him. I didn't think about that she sees it happen. So it's like, okay, you're an alien or something weird. So I've seen that. And yeah, he's doing this thing that I think works in the movie, but it's very like, it's very weird. It's a very like actory like thing, because I think Jeff Bridges even says, I got to watch a little bit of the interviews on the DVD or Blu-ray, that he was like really interested in doing this because like what a challenge that would be to play this alien who's like learning things. And I think he plays it actually really well, because there's a a way you could play that worse for sure. Like
he said he worked with like a friend who was a dancer, and they spent like a few weeks or something working on movement to like kind of show how the evolution of someone would might change if they're learning how to use their body, or like an adult body, for the first time.
That's really cool. And he was nominated for an Oscar for this movie, which is fascinating. I think it's interesting that both John Carpenter and Wes Craven made like non-horror movies, and both of them got an actor Oscar nomination, Craven with Meryl Streep and Music of the Heart.
Oh my gosh, I did not realize.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like two of the only Oscar nominations those guys ever got.
I always forget that Wes Craven directed that movie. Like,
well, yeah, and his style is nowhere to be seen in that movie. It's not like Starman, you know?
Yeah, I forgot you got nominated for that. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. This is, unless I'm mistaken, this is the only Oscar nomination for a John Carpenter movie ever, was Jeff Bridges for Starman.
It's got to be. I think so. I can't think of anything else.
If the IMDb trivia is to be believed.
Never gotten a nominated for effects. Like, none of his films have ever got, like, that is bananas to me.
Yeah, did they even have an effects Oscar in like 1982?
I meant to look that up. I was,
because
like,
if they did, like, that's insane. But I kind of feel like they didn't. I think it's a little bit of a newer award.
I'm looking it up because I thought the same thing.
Special award just for him.
Because I thought, I was like, how did he not get special effects nominations? I'm like, well, maybe they didn't exist until, you know, after a certain point or something. Huh. Well, they have one for best visual effects that they say started in 1929, which would have been, I don't know, that, man, I don't know, that just Hollywood's anti-thing.
Oh yeah, I think it did, because I was watching this one YouTube video where someone was doing like a deep dive in American Werewolf in London, and they said what won the effects Oscar over American Werewolf in London. It was just like some Oscar drama that no one remembers anymore. So yeah, I just remember that.
Oh. The Oscars. It's funny we're recording this on the day of the Oscars.
I paid no attention to that. I didn't even know that it was today.
I have to keep reminding myself that the Oscars are happening today. Like, I don't know why, because I don't really care, but I'm always like curious, I guess, like what's gonna happen. Like, but yeah, I just thought it was funny. It was the Jeff Bridges thing, and I was like, oh, the Oscars are today. But it's like, I may watch, I may not. But it's a travesty that none of his movies won for best effects, especially The Thing not winning best effects is like just crazy to me. But you know, we shouldn't look to the Oscars to get things right. I feel like it's almost like if they get it right, it's like a happy accident. Like we're like, oh good, you made the right choice.
Yeah. But...
Okay, so I looked it up for 1982 visual effects Oscar. The winner was E.T., which, yeah, you know, okay, can't disagree with that too much. And the other nominees were Blade Runner and Poltergeist. So not bad.
But yeah, I think this is the time when they only did three of the, like, specialty awards, like effects, sound editing, you know, that kind of stuff. And, like,
yeah,
and they
could be
it to five.
And also we have to remember that The Thing was a pariah in its time. Yeah. Like no one wanted anything to do with that movie. Yeah.
It's like Hollywood really hated The Thing. Like, so yeah. I guess we shouldn't be that surprised, but those are three good nominees. I can't argue with any of those movies being nominated, but yeah, at least Sarah Bridges got an Oscar nomination. I wish Karen Allen got a nomination. Cause I think she deserves
it. Yeah, the showier performance, but hers is like absolutely the momentum of the film.
Emotional. Yeah. I think this happens a lot with like the Oscars. If it's like a two-hander type movie,
yep,
there's like a showier performance and there's a more grounded performance, and the grounded performance like never gets nominated or wins. Uh-huh. And like the showy one always wins. Like for some reason, my go-to example is Training Day with Denzel Washington, Ethan Hawke, even though I love Denzel in Training Day, but he is clearly like the bigger, and Ethan Hawke's like the quieter, more grounded performance. Ethan Hawke may got nominated, but he didn't win. But and I think like Rain Man was Tom Cruise and Dustin Hoffman.
What came to mind.
That's the other one I think of, because I think Dustin Hoffman, did he win? He was definitely nominated. Tom Cruise might not have been nominated, and I've not seen Rain Man. People were like, Tom Cruise is really good, but it's not the showy performance. It's like the more grounded performance. So this happens a lot, basically, where it's like, the Academy is kind of like an animal. It's like dangle a sparkly thing in front of them. They're like, ooh. And they're like, oh, a biopic where you played somebody real and put on prosthetics. Here's your award.
That's the one.
Oh, God, they got their stuff that they like. So, but Karen Allen she breaks my heart in this movie. Like from that opening scene, like I was thinking, it's a silly thought. I'm gonna try to like bring down a serious, sad moment, but I was like, so much more effort to watch your home movies at this point. She has set up a screen.
Yeah,
you got a breakout.
Oh my God, I had that exact same thought. That's so funny.
Okay, I'm glad it wasn't just me, because I was like, this isn't just like pulling a movie up on your phone. This is like she had to go bust the projector out and the screen and pull the reels off. And I was like, she's committed to being sad that night. Like she is like drinking wine. I think she's like, don't do this to yourself, Jenny, or something. She stops and it's like, this is killing me. This is so sad. And then immediately an alien shows up and she's like, the fuck is going on? And like, because she's someone who's dealing with this crazy situation, but she's still grieving. I think she's almost in a state of shock where she's like, I guess I'll go with this weird man who looks just like my husband on a road trip. Like just I mean, like kind of what anybody would do, I think, where they're just like, I guess I'll go along. I don't know what's going on.
I think it's very smart that this movie has this mesh of like an alien movie with a road trip movie, because it allows him to interact with other people and like kind of learn about human behavior as they go along the way. I think it's like it's not the first film to do this, but I think it's just like a very effective way in how they use it through the movie, especially like the deer scene is like such a great, interesting scene in how it plays out and what it means to, you know, be a human and what it means to be an alien coming to this human world. I just think it's just like fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah, Carpenter said one of his influences for this movie was It Happened One Night.
Yes, I was going to say that too. Yeah, yeah, that's so fantastic.
I could see that. I could see that for sure. I love that it's got these comedic beats and it's still very romantic. And the road trip is a good idea to like keep things moving. I read something where they said like one of their, I don't know, their goals was to like kind of show these different landscapes in America, like and actually go to these places and shoot everything, like go all around. And
yeah, Carpenter said it was so hard because it's like basically a moving caravan and you're going through all these different parts of the US, but like the weather was changing everywhere they went. So it was like raining one day and then it was like super hot the next day wherever they went. So it was just, they said it was just like, he said it was so difficult in that regard.
I could imagine. That's, I mean, that's people like want people to shoot on location, but shooting yeah. location brings a lot of challenges like that with like dealing with the yeah. weather and all kinds of things. But I think it pays off because this movie like also looks great. There's a lot of yeah. great shots of just like
they're driving through really landscapes. The only yeah. person who could like pull something like this off, not the only person, but one of the few people who comes to mind, because he's such an effective like director in the fact that like Daniel and Anthony and I talked about this the last time, but like how he's like a really great project manager and like he's able to get stuff moving when they're in the next location probably and get it started and going and is receptive to like new ideas if things have to change on the fly.
Yeah, it's he's always been yeah good at that. That yeah. aspect of it, like because beyond being, because there's a lot of guys that I think would be good at like we like the journeyman directors, but like
yeah.
but he always maintains his own style too.
Yes.
So it's like, because I always almost feel bad when I say, oh, he's like, he's a real like steady hand. It almost makes it sound like he's just like, yeah, he can like get it done, but like he also adds his own style and flair to it. So it's beyond just yeah. like, oh yeah, he just managed this well, you know?
Yeah, like, steady hand is like, sometimes it feels like it has a negative connotation when that's right. not really what it means at all. When we see how people have like massive budgets and stuff and things go so awry, he's able to do something yes. like so successfully.
Yeah, and you know, the reality of the directing job is like, it's not so black and white that you're yeah. either an auteur or a journeyman. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. I don't think Carpenter fits in either category. He is somewhere in the middle, but further away from journeyman, I think, because he does very much have his own style. Now, he's not like an Ari Aster who only makes, you know, movies yeah. that he writes, movies that are straight out of his subconscious. Because yeah. like, he'll make movies he writes. He'll make movies that are based on Stephen King that he doesn't care about. He'll make this that he did not write. But he just always implants himself into all of his movies, whether I don't even know how much he means to or not. They just always feel like his stuff.
Yeah, that's very true. Like
I
feel like he always comes through in his movies, even like some of the lesser ones. I'm like, well, I can still see elements of Carpenter in this. Like, and there's a bunch of journeymen who are like, you couldn't pick them out of a crowd. Either they make good movies, like good solid movies. I can't like tell you like what their worldview is or that their certain style, you know. It's like, so it's always been special, is like he is that weird like combo auteur journeyman director who does both. And like this one, he basically said from somewhere I saw that he did this to show Hollywood he could do other stuff and was employable. Yeah. I think it was a direct quote. He was like and to be, it's funny that his two post thing jobs right after a thing was like a disaster, which is still very unfortunate, but like that he does two like for hire jobs, and they're both great. Like yeah. usually I feel like somebody has to retreat after a big bomb and the work maybe isn't that great, or they don't feel like they're into it, but it still feels like he's really into Christine and Starman. I mean, especially Starman. We talked about Christine on the episode. I like Christine, but I don't love Christine, but like Starman just feels like, it's so funny that he's like, yeah, I was trying to like do a job and show I was employable. And it's like, well, you put like everything into it. Like
yeah.
it feels like feels very personal from being a movie that doesn't seem like it came from a place that started off very personal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes movies are big bombs because they're not good and the director is not a very good director. But in the case of The Thing, that was not the reason. He's actually a phenomenal director. So he goes to do a couple for hire things and does a phenomenal job because that's just what he does.
Well, that's true. Yeah, no, not insinuating that's a bad movie. We all know the history of The Thing and like how that all went down. But you almost would think he might be a little defeated, or maybe like the yeah. jobs he was getting were just things he could get and maybe he wouldn't be that into it, or maybe the material wouldn't be that great because it's like, well, I got to work, you know, like but it's good material for both movies. And it still feels like he's just such a professional, I guess, that there's no signs of like, I'm like still bummed after The Thing. So I'm kind of like half, I don't think he half asked anything. Maybe closer to the end people might argue about like Ghost of Mars.
He did closer to the end.
Yeah,
yeah. But, I mean, I've heard like reports about Ghost of Mars that like he wasn't even there very often.
A movie I still like, even though it definitely has problems. It's like, yeah, I kind of feel it a little more in his later stuff, but definitely not at this time, because I mean, it helps too when you're working with like two great leads who are doing really yeah. good work. Like I think, because I was watching again, like it really comes down to them, because there's some like decent supporting people, but this is not like a super stacked out supporting cast. It's really just
just them.
I mean, they do all of it and they do a very good job with it. Like, because I love Jeff Bridges in this. Like, I like it can almost be annoying sometimes to watch an actor try to do like, I'm gonna play an alien, I'm gonna be weird and quirky, but I feel like he just plays it so perfectly. And like, clearly, like you said, with the whole getting with like this dancer thing and the movements, and like, I think something about he got with like, maybe a speech or something. There was somebody else to work on like how he would talk or how he'd learn how to talk. That feels very natural, and like where he ends up by the end. And because it's a weird character, but he makes it very like likable and like charming, even though he's kind of a weirdo for most of the movie.
Jeff Bridges.
I was going to.
Yeah, sorry,
go ahead, Lexi.
No, go ahead. Go.
Well, I was curious ask you guys, do you like Jeff Bridges in this movie? Because I think if someone doesn't like this movie, I feel like the most common answer is probably that you're annoyed by Jeff Bridges because it's such a weird performance. But I love it because it does just feel authentic to me of something that just does not know how to be human.
Yeah.
And I do love watching him learn more and more how to be human throughout the movie. And I love how this, he has just like this sweet innocence to him that's just really lovable. And that's the thing, for as like weird as he is and definitely does things that are annoying, especially to Karen Allen throughout the movie, you just like feel this just like pure motivation behind everything, no matter what he's doing. So I just find him super lovable. I love him in this movie.
Yeah, he is just, I mean, every Jeff Bridges movie is like, man, this is a beautiful man. Like, it's really like, which movie is he hotter? And that's really the question when it comes to looking at Jeff Bridges' filmography. But he is like, I love the, I was talking about the scene with the deer. I just love that scene so much and the way he plays it. And he is someone who's able to use his like natural charm and charisma in such a like a low-key way. It's not super showy. Like, I love Kurt Russell, but his charm and stuff in film is like really in your face. Like, that is, and that's part of his appeal. But like, Jeff Bridges is, his whole demeanor and stuff is like such on a lower wavelength that it fits this film where he's also trying to learn how to be human at the same time.
Yeah, that was good. It's like, I love him too. I think I made that clear, but like, I love him too, that it's not like over the top in a way. I feel like it feels a very natural, I think one might think it's over the top. I don't know, but I think it feels like it's very just natural kind of progression of how he would learn. Like, and Alexi, you may disagree because I don't think you like this movie as much as I did, but I was thinking of Poor Things with Emma Stone.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
Where her kind of progression of like being like a newborn to the world basically, and then like learning, and that has way, I think, longer and shows a way longer period of time, obviously. But I was thinking of that, and like, but his progression, yeah, just feels pretty natural. And he's like a puppy or a baby or something where you're like, even if he doesn't know any better, you're like, or it doesn't annoy or stupid, you're like, well, you don't know any better. You just got here to Earth.
He has this like natural empathy that you see throughout the film that he connects with Karen Allen. He realizes that he has her, you know, dead husband's body and face, and like, like, he's trying to be like, you know, this was the way I had to come here. Like, I didn't want to do this to be cruel. I'm trying to learn and adapt and, you know, progress and, you know, not make this something harmful to you.
Right. Which, oh, go ahead, Daniel. Sorry.
Well, I just want to ask you guys, I mean, we're talking about how much we love him. He's lovable. How do you feel about the fact that she is basically kidnapped at gunpoint and is really mad about it for like the first half of the movie? I mean, how do you feel about that? And how do you feel about that transition into like a romance out of kidnapped at gunpoint? Because I think there's a debate to be had that people would be on a very negative side about that.
Kind of a movie trope, isn't it? People like are forced with someone yeah. and they end up falling for them. Like
it very much is, yeah.
Which I mean kind of like Stockholm syndrome. But I feel like her progression makes sense where it's like it takes a while. She doesn't really trust yeah. him. Like she trusts him. She's trying to leave signs everywhere, like or trying yeah. to get people's attention. And she's even trying to leave still at that diner.
Yeah.
But she's trying to do it nicer at that point where she's like, hey, give yeah. him
at the this. Diner. Like she has the opportunity. She could leave.
Yeah. Right. And she even tells somebody, like the waitress, you give him this, give him that, like, but I'm going to leave. But then she sees him with the deer. And I feel like that moment totally like fully gets her on his side, basically, where she's like, oh, this guy is like very pure and is, you know, trying yeah. to help and just how kind he is. Like, and then I feel like she's fully on board at that point. So I feel like the progression makes sense. Cause if it just happened like with no, you know, like it just, she woke up and she was like, you know what? Now I'm in love with you. It's like, mm-hmm. it's a slow, they work there as slowly as they can for a 2-hour movie that takes place over what, 3 days, I think.
Yeah.
I feel like, and she's in a crazy situation. It's like crazier than just like a guy kidnapped me at gunpoint and then, mm-hmm. you know, took me. It's like, he's an alien. She's grieving. She's
yeah,
like,
she's like realizing that this is not a real person. Like that's her slow realization is it's like, this is not a person. It's an alien in his body, but it is not, they're not ill-intentioned. Like that was their only way when they came into this world of communicating and getting this next step. I don't even think that like he would actually hurt her or know how, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He's very much a character who does not know human morality.
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. usually when you watch this trope in movies, the person does know there's just a reason that they're pushed to this point. So I think, I don't even think he knows that the gun can like hurt her yeah. or it's a threat.
Oh yeah, I don't think
like,
so.
I think he just kind of figured out if I hold this up, I get what I want. So cool. Yeah. And then when she acts really upset about it and he puts it down, he's like, I mean you no harm. I think that's when he realizes like, oh, well, like that wasn't what I meant to convey when I held yeah. this, but I literally did not know anything yeah. about like human morality, what this thing does, none of mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. He put the gun to her head at one point, but he doesn't know. He's like threatening yeah. her. Like, yeah. And then I think when she sees him like naturally go to save this animal, she's mm-hmm. like, oh, he's got good intentions. Like yeah. that's just like natural inclination. You know, and then it's just like, okay, I'm on board. Like, just I was like thinking, what a weird situation to be in. Like, what a,
yeah.
like for her, like for anybody to be like, I'm traveling with an alien who looks like my dead spouse. across the country to get them to their alien friends. Like what the, like you just constantly be like pinching yourself. Like this has to be a dream, right? This is insane.
I think that's good. Why you have the, like, of course the government agent or whatever, who's like hunting them down, but ends up, you know, assisting them and like all that stuff. Like it's on the periphery, but it works in the movie to, you know, help them towards the ultimate goal.
Right. Or being chased too. And like, yeah. oh, that's very John Carpenter, distrust of the yeah. government. I was like, well,
of course.
There he is. Did you guys read about that? This script for Starman was at Universal, I think, the same time as E.T. And they shelved Starman. They shelved the script. Because they were like, this is too similar to E.T. And then they brought it back out a couple years later to make this. I thought that was funny that like they had them both at the same time. And they are kind of similar. He's got to get back or he's going to die. And it's like this whole thing. It's like, yeah, that's pretty similar. Like,
yeah, it's funny just like the grown up version and the kids version.
Like right, the... right. The adult like romance version yes. and versus the fun kid version. The fun kid version has some really fucked up stuff. There's stuff that disturbs me more in E.T. than in yeah. Starman. Like, I will never get over the image of E.T. like laying there on the ground, like all white or gray. Oh.
That's a movie that like traumatized me as a kid.
Yeah, we watched it over and over, but it was very traumatizing. Weirdly, a lot of similarities. But I just was like, man, they almost didn't make Starman because of E.T., which would have been a major bummer, a major loss, because yeah. I love Starman. But glad they pulled it back out. And someone called John Carpenter and was like, do you want to do this? Because I don't think he's like the natural. I mean, he has sci-fi mm-hmm. background, but it's not like he'd be maybe the first pick that comes to mind. But
yeah, right.
But yeah, it's funny the similarities to this E.T., but people wanted aliens in the 80s. I don't know. It's
hot. Did. Yeah, I didn't know about that exact story that it got shelved because of E.T., but they're very easy to compare in your head, especially when you know that like E.T. is a big reason that John Carpenter had to have a comeback and had to make some studio movies to get back in people's good graces. E.T. was like the movie that killed him for a little while. So it is interesting that he kind of makes his own E.T., but I have always thought of it that like this is the adult version, E.T. is the kids version. And I have to say, I am team Starman. I like Starman better because I've never really been a big E.T. guy. Like I didn't love it when I was a kid. And now at this point, I feel like I'm kind of too old to like really connect with it for the first time. But then like when I saw Starman was kind of like meaningful to me as an adult in a way that E.T. never was meaningful to me as a kid. So that may be a hot take, but I prefer Starman.
Understandable.
I am with you. I also think this is like a great way of showing that you can have a similar story told multiple different ways and it comes out completely different. That's why I'm like, I don't really care about remakes as much because I'm like, whatever, people are going to make their own stamp. Like usually, yeah, it's probably not going to be great, but like maybe you'll have that one that like shines through, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm very apathetic about remakes. Like most of the time I just don't see them. I just don't really care unless I hear something good about it. And then I'm like, oh, okay, then I'll give it a chance. And sometimes they are something you can love right alongside the original.
Yeah. If they're bad, if they're just forgotten about and they get put away and we just like the Point Break remake or like the Total Recall remake, like there's some remakes where you have to remind yourself they even exist. You're like, oh, right. They did remake that.
Poltergeist remake.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. It's one I legitimately forgot happened. Oh God, what was I going to say? That's about remakes and Carpenter. I don't know. But I was going to say, side thing here, I have to bring it up. Those terrible cops that chase them. I have to forget. When they leave the hotel, I think it's they leave the hotel, and then Jeff Bridges again pulls that gun up, not really, I think, understanding, and she's trying to put the gun, and the cops just open fire. Like on her side of the car, especially. And guess what? Oh, they hit the innocent kind of bystander. I was like, oh, great police work, guys. It just couldn't. I was like, Jesus Christ. I don't know. I forgot about that moment. And I was like, oh my God. Like, in terms of bad policing, that's really up there. It's like, I'm going to fire the shotgun in the car. Hope it goes well.
Yeah, like, Cooper really likes to highlight that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That guy's going to have to write up a hell of a report for his captain.
Oh, all those reports written. Oh God. I don't know. I buy their romance, but I think it's kind of a hard, kind of a tall order when you start the movie to get the vibe of this romance, but somehow they pull it off. It's probably really, I mean, the two actors just are so good.
Yeah.
I feel like they have a natural chemistry and, I'm curious your take on the thing. I don't know if it's weird or not, but the thing when on the train later in the movie, basically she's kind of like, really, I guess, kind of falling for him at this point, and they have sex. After they're done, he's like, "Hey, I gave you a baby." After Daniel has his hand raised.
I want to talk about this
because I was like, "Oh, I don't know," but I will say one thing really quick. I'd forgotten the little thing where he says to her, "If you don't want it, I can take it back right now." Like, which I guess is nice, ? I saw it kind of weird, but I just, you know, I don't know. Go ahead, Daniel. Go ahead.
Yeah, that seems the main thing I want to talk about with this movie, because that's my favorite thing in the movie. And it's the reason that, like, the last time I rewatched it before preparing for this podcast, which was the time I really connected with it, it was right after my son Theo was born. And this is also the thing that I've heard is the argument for, like, kind of against this movie, that, like, that part is really weird. But here's the thing. We're dealing with a character, Karen Allen, who is reeling in grief and kind of doesn't have any family left, doesn't have anybody left in her life. She's just left with these memories of her husband. Her husband and her were never able to have a kid. So I just think the fact that she meets this alien and what she gets from this interaction with this alien is not just like a few days with someone that she kind of falls in love with, this romance, but she gets like someone else to love that's a part of that alien, but also a part of her husband, is the child that she always wanted to have with her husband, but was not able to because it's partially her husband's DNA, because that's ultimately what impregnated her. And I just think the fact that we leave this movie, you know, she doesn't get to, you know, live with her alien lover anymore. Like, he goes away to his ship, but she's left with a child to love out of this. I thought was just so beautiful. And I just rewatched this like right after having my own kid. And it was just like the most meaningful thing that I've ever experienced. And I love that so much. And I don't think it's weird because, like, A, they had consensual sex. And when you have consensual sex at a certain age, you might get pregnant. So, like, that always might happen. But I do love that he says, like, tell me and I can stop it. Because that's ultimately what women should have, right? Like, pregnancy happens. Mm-hmm. They should have a choice of whether to go through with it or not. And he gives her the easiest choice that could ever exist, because that getting rid of a pregnancy in reality is a much more difficult thing, but he could just, you know, just make it stop right there. So it's absolutely her choice of whether to go through with it. And she does go through with it, I think, because now she finally, like, has someone new to love and to invest in that she didn't have anymore. And I think that's so beautiful. And it's my favorite thing about the movie.
Yeah, there's definite agency there, which is like, it's not like, oh, now you have a baby. Like, it's like you have someone. And I think that that is a very definitive choice to say that at the beginning of, like, her not being, them not being able to have a kid, and then to have that cycle at the end and have him be like, I can give you a kid if you want the kid. Like, if this is something that you want in your life, here you go. I want to give you this gift for this time and for your assistance. And we have created this real connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's lovely. I think it's just like a beautiful, like, way to, for her to process and restart her life almost by moving past this grief.
Yeah, no, I brought it up because I don't really think it's weird. I do think it's actually very nice and beautiful, but I could see people think it would be weird. And I kind of forgotten about it. That was a crazy thing, because I was like, man, what did she do after this whole adventure, and this guy leaves Earth and she's just alone? I was like, oh, right, she has a baby. Okay. Mm-hmm. So she has something to take away from all this.
I think that was the premise of the TV show, right?
I forgot there was a TV show.
Wait, the what?
There was a TV show that they did. I don't think any of the original cast came back. And I think it's about her in the sun or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
One season, I think. So an alien returns to Earth years after an early visit to reunite with his Earth son.
Yes.
And they search for the alien's human wife. Wait.
I can't find that, but I did find that in 2016, a remake was announced that Sean Levy was going to do, who I think Mike Scott is like the number one fan of by far.
I think so.
But apparently that's probably not happening anymore. I can't even, I'm on Starman's Wikipedia. I can't. Oh, there it is. Starman TV series. Wow. I never heard of this.
I had heard and forgotten. And it's it's the guy from Airplane.
That's so funny.
Robert Hayes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had forgotten all about the baby thing, which is crazy because it's a huge part of the movie. But until it happened, she says, I think it's, so they're in the truck and she's like, we wanted to have a baby. So it's set up with that. It's like, it's the thing she wanted. And then that happens. And I think that beat is so, that makes it so much less weird when he's like, if you don't want the baby, I can stop it right now, which I think is actually kind of nice. And he's also thinking about, like, what does she really want? Maybe she doesn't want to raise a baby by herself, but then he asks her and then she's like, yeah. So it is all very nice. It's like, then he gives her this beautiful gift before he takes off. And like, and the whole ending where they're being chased by the government, and I came with that freaking helicopter just shooting it. Like, Jesus, it's like overkill for two people on foot. Let's just shoot him out with a helicopter. But I mean, that ending kills me both times I've seen it. And the line that I think is, I think personally, is like one of the most romantic things I've ever heard, is like where he says, you can't go with me, you'll die. And she says, I don't care. And he says, I care. When he, like, that's like, that's truly like loving someone. It's like, they don't care about what happened to them, but you're like, I care what happens to you. So both sides of that, where it's like, I'll do anything to be with you, but it's like, well, I can't let you do that because I love you too. And it, every time I get a little misty eyed when that part happens. I think it's just so beautiful. And like, just almost like, I love the movie at that point. That like makes the movie, like, for me, like the cherry on top of this great movie is that bit of dialogue.
It's like, it's such a wonderful payoff of this whole film, of them connecting, like, of these two actors connecting on this level and creating this world for you to believe, and for them to, like, have this wonderful payoff at the end where you actually believe it, and they would just give it anything to each other, but she instead stays and has this kid, is able to like have the, you can see that she's gonna have this like great life in front of her, like she has this opportunity to, you know, have something to live for a little bit, you know, and not constantly be in this state of grief. It's really beautiful.
Absolutely. The one thing that surprises me though about the kid thing is what he says about the kid, that like the kid will know everything I know and will be a teacher. And I'm like, is this kid Jesus? This sounds like Jesus. At least Jeff Bridges gives her, you know, the choice whether to have Jesus or not, because I don't think God gave Mary the choice. Like, you're just having Jesus. Sorry, 16-year-old. But
sorry, you got a kid now. I thought I was like, when he brought the deer back to life, I was like, oh, is Jeff Bridges like space Jesus in this? I didn't really think it was.
Space Jesus is Franco Nero in The Visitor. Lindsay will tell you that. She's like yelling at her phone when you say that, so I had to get that.
Okay,
in.
I still got to see The Visitor. I still got to see it.
I think you're fine, but.
Oh, okay. It sounds so crazy. I feel like I need to see it with my own eyes. Like, listen, I'll do a double feature of Finding Nemo and The Visitor, and then I'll knock off two big ones right off the bucket list. Movies I need to see. Oh, God. Oh,
I don't even know what the best order is for that.
I don't know. From what I've heard about The Visitor, like, can anything follow The Visitor? It just sounds so crazy. I don't know.
I don't know. Some movies for me are like crazy overload, where the craziness starts to not matter anymore, and you almost kind of glaze over. And I feel like The Visitor is one of those movies.
It's like too much crazy where you get numb to it like halfway
through. Yeah, and you're just like, this is just going to be nonsense, isn't it? Okay.
I've had that before, where I watch a movie and I'm like, this is almost too much nonsense, because it's like, then there's nothing to hang on to when it's like, it's just constant craziness where you're like, okay, if every scene is crazy, then like, where do I... you know, what do I do with this? So, but yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think what else. You guys have things you want to bring up on Starman that we glossed over or didn't talk about, or.
I do want to shout out that Charles Martin Smith is like my favorite government agent. I feel like every time he pops up in a movie, he's a government agent. And I just watched The Experts, which is a really fun 80s comedy with John Travolta. And Charles Martin Smith is the exact same character in that movie that he is in this. And he's just good at it. Like, he's just fun to watch. And I like him. I love him in this movie.
He's very good. He's like the only other, I think, notable acting performance, honestly.
Yeah, he's like definitely third build. And there's like no fourth build.
Right.
Pretty much.
That's what it feels like.
It's like the two and then like him and that's it.
Yeah.
That is kind of what it feels like, which is okay. I mean, they're so good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the waitress at the diner. Shout out to her. Yeah. She's great. Yeah.
Really has
She's so helpful. She runs out. She's like, want me to hold the bus for you, honey? And I'm like, don't you have tables? You're really nice.
Oh, really authentic waitress vibes of diner vibes from her.
I want to go to that diner. It looked great.
Oh, heck yeah. I want some of that apple pie.
I know, the pie looked good.
What's they're the, what, oh, it's terrific. And then he just says, terrific.
You're making that food sound so good. It was right around time I need to eat lunch. And I was like, I got to go stop and eat, because this movie's talking about all this food. I was like, I got to go. That's like a trope too, of like, I think aliens or people like finding human food. They're just like gorge themselves. Yeah. Like, this is great. I'm like, yeah. It's the, and they're right.
Food's one of the best things about the human experience, I must say.
Yes, it's true. It really is.
It is. Yeah.
It really is.
Second.
Oh, but yeah, I don't want to wrap us up too soon, but I love this movie.
I think it's great. And I just hope more people watch this movie, because I feel like it's kind of gotten lost in the shuffle of like all of Carpenter's movies, because he's made a lot and a lot of them are really great. And I feel like people will kind of like dismiss this one or don't check it out or like, oh, whatever. It's like not really a horror movie, so I'm not going to see it. But I think people should.
Oh, man, for sure.
Yeah.
I think I'd held off for a while because it wasn't like, I knew it wasn't traditional John Carpenter. And then I got to it like later, because I think I was trying to, 2020, I was trying to like wrap up his filmography. So I was trying to see stuff I hadn't seen, and I'd put it on the back burner. Not because I even thought it'd be bad. I just thought like, well, I don't know. It's a different thing for him. I'll get to it.
Yeah.
And then I end up loving it. So it's like, it does kind of feel like it's, I don't know, maybe not underrated, but maybe underseen. Cause it's not the typical John Carpenter movie. And, I'm sad it apparently got a 4K, but only in like this giant Paramount
Columbia Classics line.
The Columbia Classics box set. So I'm like, can you individually release that 4K? I think it would look gorgeous on 4K. Like,
because
it's a beautiful looking movie. It really is.
I heard, I was watching a video from Mid-Level Media about that box. Shout out to him. I love that channel. And he said it's one of the best 4Ks he's ever seen. And he's like reviews like every 4K release. He's seen it all. So I really hope maybe that same transfer maybe makes it over to Screen Factory and they do one of their typical 4K re-releases or something. That would be nice. And maybe then more people would check this out. Because I almost think like maybe one reason more people aren't is like it's not just that it's not horror. It's that it's a romance, and that just does not sound like Carpenter's thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like if you look at everything before this, you're like, Carpenter doing a romance? I mean, they basically skip over the romance in Christine, and there's like nothing else in his filmography. But somehow he does, he really does it. It's almost like if you told me like Christopher Nolan is doing a romance movie, I'd be like, I don't think that's going to work. Like, I don't think that's in his wheelhouse. But you never know. Like, maybe these guys have it in them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can understand people kind of like doubting this because it's like it is so different than anything else he's done before. After, like we said, it's a road trip romantic comedy. No, I mean, not like it's a romantic comedy, like a romance movie with some comedy. I think.
When you talk about the comedy, you got to shout out Red Light Stop, Green Light Go, Red Light Go Very Fast. I think that's like the most iconic comedy moment. Like, I was watching this and like Steph recognized that moment. Like, she didn't recognize anything else, but she's like, oh, my family watched this movie.
Yeah.
Like, she remembered that.
She drives like I do. The yellow light means go fast. I'm like, yes. And you hit the gas and you go. It's like he caused a traffic accident, but it's like, it's okay. It's like, it's fine. Some hay fell off. But yeah, John Carpenter does a really good job with this. It's way out of his norm. And I really, you know, I love this movie. Like I said, it might sound crazy, but I think it's like top five Carpenter, which is a lot of stiff competition, but
that really is.
It's, I love it. And I'm kind of sad it took me so long to see. I've been kind of glad I saw it when I did, because again, I don't think younger me would have appreciated.
Yeah, I think it's like it's a good time to see it. Like, I like would not show like a kid this.
Yeah,
and be like, yeah, let's watch this fun, you know, weird alien movie.
Let's watch a woman deal with grief.
I know.
It is okay for that. Sometimes movies are for grown-ups, you know.
It's true. Yeah. It's true.
It's all right.
It's okay. And to age into movies, like you see a movie younger, you're like, oh, I don't really get it. Weirdly, my go-to example is Jackie Brown, a movie that I didn't really like that much when I was like a teenager, but it gets better like every time I rewatch it because it's an older romance in there. There's just some movies that just, you know, they just work better when you're older, and some movies work better when you're a kid probably too. So there's lots of those, but
maybe Finding Nemo. I don't know. You'll find out.
I'll have to find out. Ratatouille played great for me as an adult, especially that whole thing at the end about like the critics.
Yeah.
The criticism thing. I was like, this is
good.
Brilliant. This is in a Pixar movie. Like, so good. So I don't know. I think we all made it cool. We love Starman. It's fantastic. Great John Carpenter movie. See it if you haven't seen it, because like outside the norm for him, but it's still wonderful. I don't know. I love Starman. I don't know what else to say. So
I've had the movie on in the background, and it's right now at like the goodbye scene where all the background is blood red and the two of them are totally in blue light. It looks so good. It's such a beautifully lit scene.
Yeah, that's that ending. It looks great. I was thinking too, I have the Scream Factory. There's a Blu-ray, which I was watching. I was like, well, this looks great. I was like, I can't imagine how much better a 4K looks, but if it can look better than it already does, that's very impressive because it's already a great looking movie on Blu-ray. So I do hope you're right. I hope they somebody releases that one individually, because I don't want to buy the $100-something Columbia box set.
Yeah, no.
Like,
it is a pretty good selection. It's got like Sleepless in Seattle, which isn't even on Blu-ray anywhere else. It's got Kramer versus Kramer. It's got His Girl Friday, which is not on 4K anywhere else. It seems to be like a romantic volume for some reason. But yeah, not worth like $140 for me for sure. I'm kind of a cheap collector for the most part. You know what's funny? I was just thinking about like alien movies. And like when I was younger, when it came to alien movies, I very much wanted alien invasion. I want the aliens to be mean and scary, and I want there to be like action and blah, blah, blah. And I still like that now, but I very much come to just love like the awe and wonder alien movies like this and Close Encounters. And I'm almost wondering, like, is that becoming like my new like favorite kind of alien movie? I don't know. I mean, overall, my favorite like alien movie in general probably is Carpenter's The Thing, which just like the meanest alien possible. But I love these just a beauty of wonder kind of alien movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we need
Are
that.
Are you an Avatar fan?
Big Avatar fan, one and two.
Those are fun. Those are beautiful looking movies.
For sure.
I have become an Avatar fan after I saw the second one.
It's like, I saw the first Avatar in theaters like four times, literally.
Whoa.
Wow. I didn't see the first one in theater. No, I did see the first one in theaters. I'm sorry. But I had the worst 3D experience ever. Because it was a cheap old theater and the seats were bad and I was way too close and I felt like I'd break my neck.
And that's a long movie to watch in a bad theater.
Horrible headache afterwards. I was like, oh God, stupid Avatar. And I was saying I was regurgitating all those points about like, oh, it's just like Fern Gully dances with wolves.
It's just like Dance with Wolves, which I've never seen.
I said a lot of crap.
But I swear
with wolves.
It's just like it.
For being a guy who never seen Dances with Wolves, I talked a lot of crap about Dances with Wolves. Now I'm like, what a fool I was. A movie, again, I would not have appreciated as a younger person, I'm sure, because I wanted the patience for a 3-hour contemplative movie. But I'm like, this is fun. It's good. So
you've also come around a lot on Westerns, and it's definitely a Western.
Right. There's a lot of things that come around. Kevin Costner, Westerns, longer movies, slower movies. Like, a lot of things I've come around. I mean, I'm in my dad movie era. I really am in that.
You really are.
I really am.
It's film evolution instead of film feast.
The spin-off.
That sounds like it's a podcast about like how movies changed from their like conception into how they eventually turned out. Like you could do a hell of a series on Madam Web. Like, what was the original script for Madam Web like, and how many changes were there?
I bet the original thing for Madam Web was guys in the Sony boardroom sitting around saying, "What do we have the rights to?" and throwing darts at a board. God, that movie. I'm looking up this series of podcasts called Film Evolution. Yeah, I can't believe we don't.
Speaking of like the characters that Sony has the rights to, I can't believe we don't have like a Spider-Woman movie, no Black Cat movie, no Spider-Gwen movie. No. We have a Madam Web movie. Like, why? Of all of your like girl superheroes that you have, you have like the worst choice.
So, are those three girls supposed to be those characters in the future?
Yeah.
I think.
That's the crazy thing. Lexi and I talked about this, that they show glimpses of these Spider-Women. But they don't do anything with them. It's like you could have made a much cooler movie with those three girls having Spider Women powers, because clearly you have the right. You showed them.
I think they thought it
was going to be in the sequel.
Yeah,
but like
you
have to make a movie that people actually want to make a sequel to first.
Yeah. Right.
I can't believe there's no Black Cat movie, because like of all of their spider villains that actually could get their own spinoff and could be shown as an anti-hero, obviously Black Cat. But she's never been done, except for like the little bit of Felicia Harding in The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot they even included
none.
No,
Felicity Jones, I think, was her.
We need a Kraven the Hunter movie first. Don't forget.
Well, don't worry. It's coming this year.
Don't forget. That's first.
I feel like this is the year that's going to definitively kill the superhero movie, because the only one coming out that anyone has any interest in is Deadpool 3.
Yeah.
And after a whole year of nothing but crap, and then Deadpool 3, which might be good, this might be the nail in the coffin right here. I don't know if we're coming back.
It sounds stupid because it's only two options, but it's either that, like you said, or people needed a break and then they come back next year. And they're like, okay, I'm back.
Because next year we're getting James Gunn's Superman and Fantastic Four, which are like the two last superhero movies I'm very excited for.
Yeah. Right.
Well, the Batman 2 probably, so.
Oh, And Superman has more very... That. Oh, yeah. Is that coming next year, right? 2025?
I'm not sure, honestly.
No.
I haven't heard anything about its development other than the title, so I don't know.
It got delayed because of the actor strike and the writer strike, but I think it's 2025. But yeah, if Superman and Fantastic Four can't hit, we got a real problem, because those are pretty mainstream appeal superhero, like the groups and Superman. I mean, at that point, we got to just pack it in, because if those don't do it, just take off for like 10 years and try again, because...
Absolutely.
I don't know. It does kind of, I mean, I don't want to say it bums me out, because they made so much money and it's like things got, it's like the movies kind of got lesser in quality, but I didn't want the whole thing to go away completely. But it just feels like we've gone like to the other extreme where it's like there were so many to like, oh, now we'll have none. I don't know. We'll see. It's too early to speculate probably, but I don't know. Somebody just, I can't remember a podcast listening to where they said like they really think we're on the precipice of like getting into another one of those eras where it's like more director writer kind of pushed, like an early 90s or like a 70s, like where, because the blockbusters are failing, so it's like we have to go back to like smaller kind of.
That's very optimistic. I think it's just going to be video game movies. I think that's going to be the new trend.
Well, after Sonic and Super Mario did so well, you might be onto something.
And Last of Us and Five Nights at Freddy's. Like, it seems like they're all hitting now. You're and right. We got Borderlands coming out soon.
That may bomb. That one,
maybe
that Eli Roth directed movie that was shelved for like 2 years. I don't know.
That was directed by Eli Roth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hell of a poster though. I saw the poster and I was like, ooh, I think I would actually see that movie.
I have a friend who's like a massive Borderlands fan. Like he played, I think during like COVID times, he played like the second Borderlands game just all the time. And he did not like the trailer, but I didn't understand what his criticisms were. And then I went online. A lot of like hardcore Borderlands fans were like, oh, this looks like this is anything like the games. And like,
isn't the game just a first person shooter?
Yeah. It has all these wacky characters.
Yeah. So like, what do you expect? Hardcore Henry?
I don't know. I may be wrong, but I thought I heard a lot of the fans of the game were like, oh, we don't like the way this looks, but we'll see. I think you're right. Overall, those video game movies could. Yeah. It's so weird they took so long to get to that point because video games are popular for a very long time.
It's the same thing with comic book movies though. They were crap for so long and like almost no one would touch them. And then suddenly, boom, floodgates opened.
Right. That's true. Because I just watched something about the Super Mario Brothers 93 movie and like how off they were like from what that source material was. And I was
Did you buy that box set?
I did not buy the box set. I did not. I don't know how much it was, but I was like, that's too much for the. I have a Blu-ray of it that came from, I think, Umbrella, who I think put out that box set. But I was like, I can't double dip on the
it
Super
sold
Mario
out.
Brothers.
That thing sold out fast. Just fascinating.
If Vinegar Syndrome taught us anything. You can package up some stuff that ain't that great and then put it. And I mean, I have nostalgia, but it's not good. And now it just looks like it's so weird by comparison. Cause I thought, man, they did a like perfectly accurate Super Mario Brothers movie. Like it looks like the games and everything's like for the people who play the games. And that movie from 93 is so not that. Like, it's kind of interesting. Like, it's just people at that time who were not playing the games. They were all probably older adults who were like, yeah, look at the rights of that. It makes something super, super weird, which is interesting in theory. Cause it's like, it's not just like a straight adaptation of something, but I don't know, that movie still has a lot of problems. But I don't know. I watched a lot as a kid because it's what I had.
Yeah.
It's like that was the adaptation that existed for me. So I don't know. We are probably entering a golden age of video game movies. So we'll see. We'll see how those go. So
gotta use that IP.
They got to keep mining for IP somewhere. And they're like, oh crap, we use all the comic books to video games now. What are the kids into? Video games. Got it.
It's true. The kids are very much.
They are. Soon they'll be like, what YouTube channels can we turn into movies?
Oh my gosh. Don't give them ideas.
Mr. Beast the movie. Oh, that's probably going to happen.
No.
Just him doing weird stunts for 2 hours.
Yeah. Waving money in front of people's faces who were desperate for money to be like, if you live in this box for 24 hours, I'll give you $1,000.
I recently heard Mr. Beast talk for the first time and he sounds nothing like I imagined. Like he sounds like a normal guy. And I don't know. I just thought he looked so weird. He'd have like this really weird voice and he just sounds normal. And I was like, that's shocking.
Wow. Yeah. I have watched a couple of his videos, but then that was during COVID time. There's a lot of weird stuff going on. And like, I was like, this is whatever.
Don't
it was like,
hold anything you did in COVID against you.
Okay. Thank you. It was a weird time. It's very lonely. But I don't like just the way that so many YouTube videos are like edited and put together. It's so kind of like grating to me. Like the ones that are like his, where it's like boom, boom in your face, like real fast. Yeah. Like,
it's because they're trying really hard not to make you click away. Like that's the name of the game. So you have to like something interesting every single second.
Yeah.
Yeah. You feel the desperation in trying to keep you watching every second of that video. So, and I know most of his audience is kids. I saw the other day it was like kids watch YouTube more than anything else by like a huge margin. So I joked about making movies out of YouTube channels, but that may happen at some point. Like,
I mean, who was the MatPat was in Five Nights at Freddy's. So, kind of happening. Oh, and Dead Meat was in Scream 6 or 5.
That's right.
So they're popping up in movies now. It's bizarre.
Weird times. Weird times. I'm just gonna go watch my Clint Eastwood movies like an old man. But anyone have anything else to say? Wrap us up on Starman. I feel like we're just, this is like the after show now where we're just talking about all the same stuff.
Watch Starman. That's all I got to say.
Good, yeah, good it's message. Fantastic. Yeah. Check it out.
And and then next
Don't Be Says, check it out.
Check it out. Coming in every episode now. Next month we should be back with Big Trouble in Little China, which is another personal favorite Carpenter movie of mine. So absolutely. Very excited about that. I'm guessing Daniel will be back for that one. I don't, and I will, we'll see.
We'll see.
Okay. You're like, I don't know about that. I don't know who even, I think I know who the guest should be, but I'm not sure they're committed. So it's all a big mystery.
It'll yeah. I haven't talked to them in a long time, so you may want to reach out again.
Okay.
I mean, one of them will for sure come, for sure. Yeah. The other one is real fancy and he might be busy.
He's a busy man. But I was like, well, I'll be here. I know that. I'll be here to do this. So, well, thank you both for doing this. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Love this movie so with fun. You. I always love chatting with you guys about stuff.
Absolutely.
Same. Yes. Yes. And okay. Well, Lexi, do you want to plug your show and people can follow you and all that?
Oh yeah. You can find me at Stunning Gun on Twitter and Instagram. And then the podcast is all the places. It's going to be starting the first week of April. I know I said the last week of March last time, but I'm just going to do a fresh start and do the first week of April just to jump Makes it sense. All off. Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking forward to that coming back. I feel like it's been gone yes. a while, but I'm looking forward to it. So, no judgment or anything. It's like when I said it's been gone a while, but I miss listening to that show. So, I'm happy to be back soon. So, Daniel, where can people follow you and all your work?
Well, speaking of bashing YouTube channels, I have a YouTube channel. I yeah, hope it's not, too like obnoxiously edited.
Yours is not, it's not like that.
Yours is not like that at all. That's when I said that. I was like, his is not like this. He won't be offended.
No.
It is snappier edited than a lot of like movie channels. So I hope it's not too obnoxious. But yeah, so I'm doing kind of like a series right now on vampire movie ranking videos. And I'm currently editing mine on the top 15 1990s vampires. I feel good about like what the list is overall, but the order is weird and some people might be mad, but that's okay. It's like my weird opinions. I'm also doing a series reviewing all of the Hammer Frankenstein movies and I'm almost done with that. So yeah, that's kind of the thing I got going on. So check out the Cobwebs channel on YouTube.
Exciting. I'm very excited for that 90s vampire video because I feel like the 90s was just lousy with vampire movies. Like
yeah, and they're like real low-grade B movies and then there's like really prestigious A-list movies and sometimes like the B movies are over the A-list movies on my list and I don't know how people will feel about it, but
listen, I won't give you too hard a time, but I just crossing my fingers that Blade is somewhere in that top 15.
Blade is on the list. Don't
perfect
worry.
That's all I need. Order almost means nothing. I'm just, it's like secondary to me. I just need to be on the list. I don't have to be one of those guys in your comments like, where's Blade?
It's there.
The Dog Soldiers worry. People who were like, where's Dog Soldiers? Your werewolf movie. you get random messages about like me spamming you about where's Blade, but if it's in there, it's fine. So
I promise. Right.
I'm excited. Okay. And yeah, for our stuff, it's the usual. You can follow me on Twitter at BaplitA7, follow the podcast, Film Feast Pod. Follow me in the podcast on Instagram, Film Feast. I did a podcast recently that should be out by the time this comes out, called The Forgotten Film Cast. I was invited on there. But Todd, very nice guy, invited me on there. And we talked about Drive from 1997, not the Ryan Gosling Drive. The 97.
Oh, cool.
Which is a great movie that I really didn't have a chance to talk about, but I love Drive. So it was a lot of fun. It was a good time. So Everyone should check that out. I'll probably retweet it when it comes out. But yeah, that's it. And we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.